Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Ja'Kari Jackson. This is what we have in store for you for this December 12th, 2012 edition.
Tonight, police argue the use of tasers is not unconstitutional if used to compel obedience. And yet another woman is brutally tasered by police. Her crime? Wanting to buy more than one iPhone. Then, the U.S. military says children are legitimate targets in Afghanistan. All that and more on tonight's InfoWars Nightly News.
Top story headline. Lawsuit. Use of taser not unconstitutional when used to compel obedience. Now, to give you a little backstory on this story, a woman in Oklahoma was tased by a police officer with her hands handcuffed behind her back. Now, she did spit on the officer, which officers do consider to be assault, but the officer responded by taking his taser and firing it point blank range into the woman's chest. Let's take a look at the article. Cops and attorneys have argued in the ongoing lawsuit that the use of a taser at point-blank range on a handcuffed woman does not constitute assault with a dangerous weapon, and that the use of tasers is not unconstitutional when used to compel obedience by inmates. Williams, that's the woman in the suit, was charged with felony assault and battery on a police officer. She was given a 10-year suspended sentence. Now, if she got a 10-year suspended sentence, of course the guy had to get something, right? Well, let's take a look. The lawyer for the officer in this case argues that he had the right to use the taser because he was using it to control her behavior, not to inflict damage. So I guess his intention was not to harm the woman. So they're saying it was all good, and you can taser people at point blank range. Now, once again, she did spit on the guy, but I think spit versus a taser is definitely a overreaction. He wasn't trying to subdue her. You know, I've had a job working at a jail, and I've seen people spit and, you know, even throw feces at people. They usually put a bag over their head if they spit, and or, you know, put them in some type of solitary confinement. Using a taser to, you know, keep somebody from spitting at you is definitely excessive, and definitely interested to see what happens with this case as it develops. Next story. Woman brutally tasered by police for trying to buy an iPhone. Let's take a look.
You can hear the taser and screams from a 44-year-old woman. Shoujo Lee says she speaks Chinese, not English, and says it was a misunderstanding because of the language barrier. She says she wanted to buy several iPhones for family in China, but on Friday was limited to buying two. She says she recorded video in the store of what looked like other customers buying more.
See, excessive force, again, this is even worse than the first story. At least that lady spit out. I'm not justifying the actions of the officer, but this lady trying to buy an iPhone didn't speak English, you know, so, and that's the defense a lot of these guys are using. Well, I told them that I was going to tase her. I told her that I was going to tase her. Speaking loud in a language that somebody doesn't understand doesn't help the situation. If all you people say, well, you should know the language when you come to this country. What about the guy who got tasered in the auto accident? A guy had a seizure while driving his car, you know, wrecked his car, and the cops are like, hey, get out your car. And the guy's having an actual seizure. The cop tases the guy for having a seizure. So, I mean, yelling and saying, yeah, I'm giving him a warning. A verbal warning doesn't always do the trick. So I definitely hope that police, not just here in this particular instance, but all cases everywhere, will seriously rethink the way they use their tasers. And I mean, I can't even really fault the officers because they're following a procedure that they're allowed to follow. So change the procedures radically, you know, from the ground up. Start over and look at the use of tasers. We'll move on to our next story. Too fat to serve. U.S. Army gives tons of overweight soldiers the boot. Tons of overweight soldiers. Oh, man. All right, let's take a look at the article. 15 times more troops were discharged from the U.S. Army this year due to obesity than 5 years prior. Over the past 15 years, the figures of obese people actively serving more than tripled. Now, the article goes on to talk about sedentary lifestyle and, you know, other things that affect troops. And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, disregard that. I guess there are people who live, you know, kind of a sedentary lifestyle. They go join the military. Maybe they're not in the best of shape. But, I mean, a good man is hard to find. If you got people willing to serve their country, I definitely am interested to see how they would evaluate somebody who's fit to serve. I don't know if they have, you know, some kind of time drill or body mass index or whatever else they use. But we all know that they're trying to get more robots, more drones, and the Pentagon admits that they don't trust their own drones. They're basically trying to, you know, replace the actual on-ground troops or in-air troops anyway. So this is just another way to do it. And I'm interested to see how they evaluate that, to say you're too fat to serve. But that's the world we live in nowadays. Next story. Senate kills Pentagon's alternative CIA. Yeah, Pentagon, you thought you slipped one through there, didn't you? Let's take a look at the article. Washington Post reported that the Pentagon planned to send hundreds of additional spies abroad, and in doing so would establish an espionage network that would rival the size of the CIA. In a harshly worded explanation drafted in Washington last week, though, the Senate Armed Service Committee suggested that the Pentagon has a lot to get right before a request like this can be cleared by Congress. So good job, Senate, on that one. And don't be fooled. The Pentagon's, they're gonna redraft this and, you know, put some slick lawyer talk in it and try to get it passed again. But as, you know, the Senate pointed out, you can't do what, right with the stuff you have. We're not gonna give you, you know, 100 more guys who wanna be James Bond. So good job, Senate, and keep your eyes open for the next assault. Next story. Media ignores bombing of Social Security building. And why would they do such a thing? Paul Joseph Watson will tell us why. The reason why the story has received such scant coverage is most likely due to the fact that the alleged terrorist blamed for carrying out the attack, Mr. Al-Dasari, is an Iraqi refugee who helped the United States in the uprising against Saddam Hussein in 1991. Continuing, the feds allege Al-Dasari, a convicted felon, detonated the device outside of Casa Grande Social Security Administration office on November 30th. Is Al-Dasari yet another of numerous double agents brought into the United States under Bush and Clinton that were later identified as culprits behind domestic terrorist attacks? And is this one of the reasons for the corporate media's complete disinterest in the story? I don't know, Paul, but those are some very good questions. You know, you can't have your patsies getting caught up in big media attention because that draws attention to the people who are controlling the puppets. So I'm definitely interested to see what's going to happen with this. And this happened, what, November 30th? And this is my first time hearing about it today. So maybe people in Phoenix have more information. And, hey, get us more information if you have it. Next story. U.S. Army starts targeting children when you thought the bar could not drop any lower. We've heard Obama say all military-age males in a, you know, war zone are potential insurgents and, you know, fodder for the fire. The Bush administration says, hey, we have no problem torturing kids. And now in this latest shenanigans, now the U.S. military is starting to target children for assassination in battle. As depicted in an article by Military Times, the United States military says that children are legitimate targets in war because in Afghanistan, sometimes children are used by the Taliban and insurgents. So, hey, and I like what this article, it makes it plain, it says assassinate. When you assassinate somebody, you're not in active combat. You can assassinate somebody sitting on the toilet. So they're saying, hey, if we think little Timmy over there has an explosive in his soccer ball, we'll give him the business. And I'm not saying there aren't kids. I mean, there are definitely kids that are used as mules. They put bombs in kids' backpacks. Unknowingly, they have kids. They give kids soccer balls with grenades in them and all kinds of different stuff. So I'm not saying the kids aren't used, but just to say that, hey, we'll shoot a kid because they're suspicious or they're in this particular area. That's definitely a horrible thing. And as I always say, keep thinking it won't happen here and here in the U.S. Just keep thinking that. And then we'll move on to our next article. CIA's Al-Qaeda mercenaries threaten to execute journalists in Syria. The CIA's mercenaries in Syria are threatening to kill a Russian journalist unless $50 million ransom is met by December 13th, which is tomorrow. Word of the deadline arrives as the Obama administration officially recognizes the Free Syrian Army as a legitimate representative of the Syrian people. Free Syrian Army, another term for Syrian rebels, which is another term for Al-Qaeda. We've documented here several times, and Paul Joseph Watson loves to point out, he didn't write this particular article, most of your Syrian rebels aren't even Syrian. They're Al-Qaeda. Yeah, I mean, it's completely ridiculous. And you take a look at the lady right there, Mrs., forgive me, Kochneva, I'm sorry, I'm not Ukrainian. And just journalists being targeted. And I can't vouch for everything the woman's doing to say she's impersonating some type of secret agent. I'm not exactly sure all of what she's up to. But if she's being targeted because she's a journalist, that's definitely a wrong thing to do. And, you know, sad as it is to say, I guess we'll find out tomorrow what her fate will be. I'm not sure anybody is supposed to the $50 million. So I guess we'll find out soon. Next story. Sorry, protesters, your jobs are being sent to China and not coming back. We'll just read a small section of this here. Michigan already has the highest rate of union membership in the Midwest. It also has the highest rate of unemployment in the Midwest. And over the past couple of decades, thousands of businesses in Michigan have either closed down or moved facilities overseas. Now, as far as the unions are concerned, I'm kind of on the fence. You know, I'm from a right-to-work state, and right-to-work is working for me. So, I mean, it's a state issue. It's a state-by-state, case-by-case. You know, Michigan, you know, maybe you want to recraft your unions a little bit and keep it on, or if you don't want your unions, you know, that's your business. So I don't lean one way or the other as far as unions or right to works are concerned. But we have another article here that ties into it. Now, this is just a tie-in. I guess we can go to that one, Marcos. We'll come back to this other one. Now, union thugs assault journalists. Fox News journalist Stephen Crowder was attacked on Tuesday as he attempted to interview union members outside the Capitol building in Lansing, Michigan. In the video, a middle-aged man punches Crowder several times, and the guy really did get hit in the face. You know, I guess he's a nonviolent guy. He chose not to fight back, which is fine. You know, I respect that. But as you can see there, the guy, Mr. Crowder, he was out there asking people questions. Maybe he was asking the hard questions, but still asking questions nonetheless. The closest thing he got to being violent himself, and I stress the closest thing, some people were attacking a tent, as you can see right there. Mr. Crowder tried to pull the people back who were attacking the tent because there were people still inside the tent, and people were, you know, stomping on the tent and all kinds of different things. And Mr. Crowder tried to pull some people off. I guess the crowd didn't like it, and he was physically assaulted. Now, you know, I'm definitely not saying that he deserved it. He didn't deserve to be hit in that instance, but once again, I'm not backing everything he did, because later on he went on Sean Hannity and was talking about how bad the unions were and how great the world would be if, you know, we got rid of the unions. So I'm not saying that, you know, if unions work for you, they do. You know, a right to work is working for me. So now, before you change, Marcos, this was the article I was going to jump into. You didn't know dude threw this in, did you? Okay, now we have, I think it's on one of the computers, Marcos. Leaked Bilderberg documents, nationalism is dangerous. And if you scroll to the, I think it's the bottom picture. Scroll. Down, a little more. There, up. Right there. Okay. Now, that is a document from Mr. Walter Reuther. He is the president of the United Auto Workers Union, and this is back in April 13th of 1966. This is a document from Bilderberg. So just something to keep in mind, for the auto workers out there, your union president was out there hobnobbing with Bilderberg back in the 60s, and I'm not sure, you know, what that's done for you since. But definitely keep that in consideration as you move forward. All right, that brings us to our last segment, Drone Hacked Over Austin. Now, we definitely like to thank everybody who joined us this past weekend for our first ever drone mob, the world's first, as far as we know, drone mob and protest. We've got to meet a lot of great people out there, and some of them we will be talking to soon. But we have this article right here from Melissa Melton, and in it she talks about a guy we met out there, Mr. George Bliss, who actually hacked a drone right in front of us, our own drone. Austin, Texas resident George Bliss showed up to the drone mob not with a drone, but with a laptop. Using a free open source software he downloaded off the internet, Bliss was able to demonstrate how easily anyone can disrupt the signal between drone operator and drone, effectively taking control. And we actually have a video that Melissa Melton shot and edited, so let's take a look at that now.
This is Melissa Melton reporting for InfoWars Nightly News. Last weekend, InfoWars hosted its first ever drone mob, a citizen protest of our taxpayer dollars being used to turn drone technology against us. With the Federal Aviation Administration announcing that 30,000 drones are set to fill our skies over the next decade, regardless of the threat to our civil liberties, many people showed up to speak out against drones and to fly them, but one man showed up to hack them.
Hey, everybody, thanks for coming out to the drone mob here. We have a guy who came here, he brought his Wi-Fi system, and it'll actually take control of drones. So we're going to have kind of like a live demonstration.
So we're about to see a demonstration of free open source software that any person can get. He's going to use it to take control and jam the signal.
Okay, I'm now running the block right now. I can see that I'm getting some acknowledgement that it is being effective.
So it's just hovering.
So yeah. Staying in a hover mode, he's basically killed it.
You don't have to be particular with the drone. It doesn't have to be targeted towards anything specifically.
Our particular drone has an automatic landing feature. All you have to do is push land, and it'll land. As you can see, David's trying to hit the automatic land, and it will not land.
Is it working, David? Can you control it anymore?
It's pretty hard.
Okay, so you do have control over the drone.
I do. I'm spinning around right now.
Okay. Okay, there you go. Here's your spin. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and see if I can disrupt that here and stop you from being able to control it as well.
So you have any control?
Not yet.
He is trying to spin it like he just was. These acknowledgments here are acknowledgments of what I'm sending, which is telling the drone it wishes to disconnect from the controller. You might want to ask him.
Yeah, what's going on, Jakari?
Before you saw I was spinning the drone just around in a circle. Now I'm using my keypad to do the same thing I was doing before, and I've lost, I guess, complete control of the drone.
Now, this isn't the first time a domestic drone has been hacked. Spending just $1,000 in parts, students at the University of Texas were able to build a device that allowed them to hack a drone in front of the Department of Homeland Security.
This is all available on the internet. This is something that, you know, can easily be taught to anybody. We have the power to do that, and this is just a small demonstration of that power.
This is so easy to do. Any person can do this. I mean, even if they're using a different type of system, you saw how easy it was to do it this. I mean, how easy do you think it's going to be for just anybody? I mean, we're filling the skies with 30,000 drones. How easy is it going to be for these other things to get taken over that actually have, you know, weapons on them? They have rubber bullets on some of these. They got tasers on some of them.
Yeah, it's going to be extremely easy. Iran's already demonstrated. Not only did they take over one spy drone recently, the first one they captured was the latest of our stealth technology.
I mean, I've interviewed several people on this topic, and all the time I get answers like, well, but it's for my safety. It's going to make me safer, and I'm not doing anything wrong, so it's totally fine. What do you say to people who say that?
Well, I think they need to be free-thinking individuals. I mean, there's several consequences for any action. And if anybody wants to get away with something, even if they're doing it for another reason, they're going to lay out all the consequences of what something can do or will do. They'll pick the prettiest one. They're going to sell it based on that. And if we don't look for ourselves at the other consequences of the actions that we're being asked to support or let them take, then we're all going to be enslaved. It's going to be simple for them to do.
For InfoWars Nightly News, I'm Melissa Melton.
So great report, Melissa. Like I said, it is definitely a fun time to meet everybody out there. And I believe we will have Mr. Bliss on the show here shortly. And for anybody who says, he just hacked a toy drone. What about the University of Texas that hacked a real drone? What about that? These things are not hack-proof. Just go ask the CIA. They got the naked pictures and dirty messages all over the internet. Nothing's hack-proof. So we look forward to speaking to you, Mr. Bliss, in the very near future. Now, concerning the drone mob, we actually got some coverage, some sizable coverage, one particular from Press TV. If we can take a look at the article, Americans in Texas protest spy drones. And it just goes on to say that we here at InfoWars had a drone mob, and people came out, and we definitely appreciate the attention we got internationally. And speaking of the drone mob, we do have a contest underway. We have a video contest for the best video of the event. Now, we had a lot of people email us and contact us on, you know, various social media. They say, hey, I wanted to go to the drone mob, but I live in Canada, I live in Germany, I live wherever. So we opened up the ranks so more people can participate. So you didn't have to be present the day of the event to participate. If you did and you got your own footage, that's great. But you can also use our footage, and how you use our footage, if you scroll down a little bit right there, you can see many of our videos. We have that video, Texans Protest Skynet. That's an older video, but Melissa Melton has a video out. I believe David Ortiz did a man on the street at the event. So there's plenty of footage out there, and I'll actually make another video. It's just B-roll footage. I'll put it on InfoWars Headline HD, maybe even Alex Jones HD. And you guys can just go pull stock footage, make your own videos, and submit them to our contest at Infowars.com. Now, we're going to go into the rules because with contests, we've run several contests here at Infowars, and not everybody follows the rules, and people get all mad. I didn't win the contest, and I wasn't in the top 10. A lot of people don't follow rules. So if we can put those back on screen, we'll go by rule, so everybody can have a clear understanding of what it takes to be a participant and to win the contest, okay? So let's take a look right here. Video must contain footage or photographs taken at the InfoWars drone mob at Zilker Park in Austin, Texas on December 8th, 2012. We just want to be very clear. That's why we put all that stuff in there. Video may contain other footage and articles, analysis, etc., as you deem necessary. So you don't have to use all our footage. If you want to take our footage and splice it with some of your own, if you filmed something in your backyard, if you found video via some other source, you can do that as well. Now, as I said before, you didn't have to be present the day of the event to participate. So let's take a look at the rules again. Moving on. Okay. You must upload your video to YouTube with InfoWars Drone Mob somewhere in the title. So, example, you could say Mark's InfoWars Drone Mob or InfoWars Drone Mob, you know, whatever. Make sure you put InfoWars Drone Mob in the title and put it on YouTube. I know there are other video sites, but we're doing this through YouTube, so make sure you put on YouTube. In addition to the title and closing screens, Infowars.com must appear twice in the video footage for 30 seconds. And you must include, remember, include the title and closing screen that reads Infowars Drone Mob Video. I skipped one right there. So include both of those. Video must contain the title screen. Just, what's the movie is coming out? The Hobbit. I'm sure The Hobbit, I have some screen that just says The Hobbit. And that's what yours needs to say. Not The Hobbit, but InfoWars Drone Mob Video Contest. Make that your slate. Put that at the front and back of your video. And also, make sure you have InfoWars.com appear twice in the video footage for 30 seconds. Now, you can do this however you want to do it. How I would suggest that you do this, if you scroll down a little bit, Marcos, not to the video, the next video. Next video. What's the next video down? Go, okay, right there. You see in the corner right there, we have InfoWars.com. That's what I would suggest you do. I mean, you can get all artistic with it, but just if you do something simple, something plain, something noticeable, I think that'll probably be the best thing. If we can scroll back up to the rules. Okay, and I guess this is our last one. Video must be uploaded to YouTube in a link email to contest@infowars.com by 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, December 21st, 2012. Okay, so if you don't live Central Standard Time, I'd highly suggest that you upload it before the 21st, otherwise you're going to miss your date. And also be sure to send a link to InfoWars, contest@infowars.com. Do not send us a copy of your video. Do not include the actual video file. Just send a link to your YouTube page in your contest. And also, please keep all your submissions to 5 minutes or less. Okay, when we say 5 minutes, we don't mean 520, we don't mean 505. If you make a great video that's 5 minutes and 30 seconds long, we may play it, but you will not win the contest, okay? So just make sure you make all your stuff 5 minutes or less. Because even that, if you scroll down, we had that video right there, Marcos, the first one. That was 7 cameras of footage. I edited that down in about 2 hours to a minute and 43 seconds. So if I can do that, and that's all the footage. That is every single piece of footage we had. Well, not all in that video, but I cut from all that stuff, 7 cameras of footage to a minute 43. If I can do that, you can cut your thing down to 5 minutes. All right? So look forward to your video submissions, and you'll get a little prize if you get to win. So, well, we also have another contest. I almost forgot. Bob Costas. Okay. Now, for you guys who have been listening to the radio show, you've heard Alex talk about boycotting the NFL, NBC, and Bob Costas. So we have a contest. If you scroll down to the rules there, Marcos, or to the address, I mean. If you take a video of yourself writing a letter to Bob Costas, just say, hey, I mean, you don't have to repeat what I say. Just basically, hey, Bob Costas, blaming guns for violence is like blaming spoons for obesity. Yeah, so there you go. There's a great illustration right there. I don't think that spoon is the cause of that lady's problems. But so email Bob Costas, and there's the address right there on your screen. Email. Make a video of yourself. Film yourself. Have your friend film you writing the letter to Bob Costas. Include a spoon and mail it. Show yourself dropping it in the mailbox or whatever you do. And just send that to Bob Costas. And the best video for that will receive $1,000 as well. And as you can see, forward an open letter of submissions to writers at Infowars.com. And that brings us to the end of the news, but the news is not even close to over. We'll have the full interview of Ben Fuchs and Dr. Wallach. People have been asking about that, so we're going to re-air the whole hour and a half interview coming up after this segment. But before we do all that, let's go to the quote of the day. And this one from Ravi Shankar, who passed away today. What will you say on the end of the world, December 21st, 2012? A fiction, a nice fantasy fiction, that by Mr. Shankar. So that's the end of this news segment, but like I said, the show is not close to over. So if you'd like to support this broadcast, check out the all-new PrisonPlanet.tv. There it is, the new site, up and running. We have all the stuff that you know and love. We're still updating it, so work with us on that. But that's a new site, cleaner, more efficient. So definitely take a look at that. You can get 10 subscriptions for the price of one and also get your 15-day free trial. And also check out InfoWarsShop.com. Now, the big thing we have going right now is the Alex Everything Pack. That is 18 DVDs for $99.95, including Alex's latest Strategic Relocation with Joel Skousen. And that is one incredible gift. I mean, the Strategic Relocation alone is, what, $25? It's brand new. So it's definitely a great pack for everybody on your list. You can just buy that and hand them out like candy at Christmas. So that's the full list right there. So be aware of that. And that's the end of this segment. And we'll be back with our explosive interviews right after this.
Recently, the Harvard School of Health looked at more than a dozen scientific studies concerning fluoride and confirmed what countless other scientists have been documenting for decades. Sodium fluoride in the body reduces IQ and increases cancers. You see, the aluminum industry and the fertilizer industries would have to pay to store all the toxic waste they produce. But instead, they get our counties and cities to pay to put the poison in our water. It's not just fluoride we're getting, but lead, mercury, arsenic. The list goes on and on. And a lot of this toxic waste comes from China. Unfortunately, fluoride and its derivatives are only one of hundreds of toxins being added to our drinking water. We're battling the globalists on so many fronts. Health is an area where we can all take control of our lives, and it all starts with that basic building block of water. It is time to purify our family's water. The ProPure filtration system with added fluoride filters is the best system from my research to protect you and your family. InfoWarsStore.com already has the lowest prices on ProPure water filtration. But until December 10th, we are going to offer 15% off the already lowest price. I know what I'm giving my family this Christmas, ProPure. Go to InfoWarsStore.com and get 15% off the already lowest price out there with the code WATER15. WATER15 and you get 15% off at InfoWarsStore.com. Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals. But the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com. Sign up as a distributor and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com.
Hey there, I'm Pharmacist Ben, and I am so proud and honored to be talking to this gentleman sitting by my side here, Dr. Wallach. I've known him for going on 15 years. I got a tape in the mail, like a lot of folks, Dead Doctors Don't Lie, back in the mid-90s. And then I had the incredible opportunity of getting to see Dr. Wallach, and since then, he never ceases to amaze me, and I'm really, really excited to get to, not only for me to be getting to talk to him, but also for you guys to get to hear what Dr. Wallach has to say. So with that, Doc Wallach, thank you.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you.
good to see you and good to be here with you. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about how you started? You got a great story about how you started to get involved with nutrition as a farm boy, how you noticed things with the animals, and how you had a personal connection with nutritional supplementation, how it worked out for you.
Well, I'd like to do that, Pharmacist Ben, but I'll tell you what, before we do that, how about you telling us a little bit about Pharmacist Ben?
About Pharmacist Ben? All right, well, Pharmacist Ben started his pharmacy career in 1986, and in pharmacy school, a lot of people don't realize this, but we study a little bit about nutrition, but we study nutrition in terms of how nutrients are medicines, and we study how diseases are deficiency diseases. So this is one of the reasons why I connected with you so well, because this is your message. We're not sick, we're starving. Many of the things that we consider to be diseases, heart disease, diabetes, the things we die from in this country, are really nutritional deficiencies at their core. And what I like to tell people is, at the point of death itself, we don't die of what it says on our death certificate. We die because some tissue system somewhere, some organ system somewhere, is not being fed. So we literally die of nutritional deficiencies. And in pharmacy school, I was studying how vitamin A was connected to vitamin A deficiency was connected to night blindness, and vitamin C deficiency is connected to circulatory problems. And on the other hand, I was studying how prescription drugs were toxic and how they had side effects. I remember one time we watched a movie on beta blockers. These are drugs that stop the heart from working in order to lower blood pressure. And this was a movie put out by Ayers for their new drug Inderal, and it was going to revolutionize the hypertension business. And I remember the movie was an hour long, 15 minutes about how revolutionary their drug was, and 45 minutes with some guy reading the side effects of the new drug. 45 minutes, I'm telling you, reading the side effects. So I got the idea that we got a real big problem in this country in terms of healthcare. And the more I studied, the more I got into it, the more I realized that if we could just get nutrients in the hands of people, if we could just get people to start taking nutritional supplementation, we could do a lot of good. So I started practicing in my pharmacy using essential fatty acids to help people with their skin, essential fatty acids to help women with their menstrual cramps, B vitamins to help lower blood pressure, and lo and behold, as I'm sure you know, the results were tremendous. So from the get-go, almost, I realized as a young pharmacist that we could be using nutritional supplements instead of using medicines, and we could be helping a heck of a lot more people, and we could be saving a lot of money on top of that. Then when I heard your message, I was all over it. I got that tape in the mail, Dead Doctors Don't Lie, and I was like, who is this guy? And I listened to it, and I listened to it, and I got to tell you, I stole some of your ideas, and I went out, and I started talking to folks using some of your ideas. And then one day I was working out in the gym, and I met a guy, and we were talking. I said, yeah, you have to hear this tape, Dead Doctors Don't Lie. I said, oh, my God. I know Dr. Wallach, and it turns out that this guy knew our mutual friend Robert mm-hmm. Snook, and long story short, he took me to one of your talks. I listened to one of your talks, and I was a believer and a follower, and that's how I got involved with longevity, and that's how I got involved with you. So in any case, now I want to talk about you, and your story is very interesting, how you started with nutritional supplementation. Now, I started, it was already the 1980s. So it was all, there were already people who were understanding that vitamin C and the B complex and essential fatty acids and minerals were very important. But when you were working with nutrients, we're talking about the 1940s, vitamins were only really discovered 20 years before by mainstream science. So for you to get on board, you had to be quite the visionary. I wonder if you could maybe tell the viewers a little bit about what went through your synapses to make you realize, hey, there's something out there that we could be using to help take care of what people are considering diseases, people are considering genetics, genetic maladies, people are considering birth defects, but really are nothing more than nutritional deficiencies.
Well, it actually started when I was 4 years old. I had a disease that would be called today Tourette syndrome. They didn't have a name for it back then, but it's Tourette syndrome. And I had facial tics, and, you know, blink my eyes, and I'd get facial cramps, and it progressed. It got worse every year. By the time I was 9 years old, I'd go into a tetany and fall over, and my friends, my peers, my age group classmates would say I was possessed, and they could bump me around and give me a bear hug and cause me to go into this tetany. And so I started complaining to my mom, and she took me to an eye doctor for some reason, who's an MD eye doctor, and they examined me and said, I can't find anything wrong with him, except he's got very long eyelashes, and they're hitting his glasses, curling back and tickling his eyeballs. That's what's setting this off.
They thought that was what, mm-hmm. he tried to say that was causing the tetany.
That's right. And so I'm 9 years old, and I'm not buying it. And I said, no, that can't be my eyelashes tickling my eyeballs. It's too much of a systemic problem. I didn't use the word systemic, but my whole body was affected, so I didn't believe it was just my eyes. So the next morning, I went to the library in school, and I went and found a nurse's health handbook and looked for long eyelashes and eyelid twitches and that kind of stuff, and couldn't find anything, so I just went into the index and just started A, and I got down to cramps. I said, well, maybe it's a cramp, because I was playing sports and 9 years old, and I said, well, I've heard of leg cramps and things. And so I looked it up in the book, cramps, and said it was a calcium deficiency. Well, before the bus would pick me up to go to school every morning, I would feed our calves who were going to take to the auction this little bag full of alfalfa pellets, but it had a little analysis tag on it, and I'd read the analysis tag. It talked about protein and fiber and calcium. And so I went home that day after school, ran right to the barn, started eating these calf pellets. Tasted like sawdust, but hey, I had a problem. I was going to get rid of it. Next morning, I threw the Cheerios out to the chickens. I filled that cereal bowl up with the calf pellets, put milk on it. I did that for 3 days. By the third day, it was gone.
Forever.
Forever.
Wow.
And of course, I've been taking the 90 essential nutrients twice a day since I was 9 years old, 64 years.
So what went through your head as a young boy when you're taking these things that are for the calves, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you're this movement disorder that must have been traumatic for you as a kid?
Well, what
went through your head? You thought it was a miracle?
Well, I thought it was one of those eureka moments, because I understood something that doctors didn't. I recognized immediately that doctors didn't know anything about nutrition when I was 9 years old. And I don't know if that was a divine appointment or what, but I do know that I realized then at 9 years of age that doctors really didn't know much about that sort of thing. And I didn't realize that I was going to get into it as a profession, but I knew that I could help myself and I could help my mom and my grandma and that kind of stuff. And so I began to do more reading on nutrition, and I began to mix chicken food with the calf pellets and dog food, and I was making my own little meatloaf and things. And As a 9-year-old boy. By the time I was 18, I really had it figured out, and went to agricultural school at the University of Missouri. Halfway through ag school, applied for veterinary school, got accepted, finished my ag degree 2 years into my veterinary degree, actually found the first case of a mass die-off from pollution, got it written up in international journals and veterinary journals, and that started my path between nutrition and finding a mass die-off from pollution and actually get written it up. It was the first one in America.
Okay, I want to hear about this mass die-off. That sounds interesting.
Well, halfway through ag school, I applied for veterinary school. I was just as a lark. I figured I'm going to start practicing, so when I graduate ag school, I'll apply and I'll know what I'm doing. Well, because I was working my way through school, feeding the university's beef herd and the dairy herd and milking the cows, the herdsman gave me very good recommendations, and so I got in as a sophomore ag student. They said, well, you really don't have to finish ag school if you don't want to, but I wanted to. So by the time I finished ag school, I'm a sophomore veterinary student, and now I'm a graduate student. Well, that just so happens in 1962, all the professors took off and left the graduate students in charge of all the services. And, of course, pathology services, farmers would bring in dead animals. You had to find out what they died from and so on. Or you have to look at biopsies from surgery of small animals. Well, there's one day, this farmer brings in 50 lambs, and he says he had 500 lambs die the night before. They said, anybody else around? He said, no, just me. He said, I don't understand it. And so I started doing autopsies on him. As soon as I cut that first lamb open, I knew what it was, because the blood that came out onto the wool looked like chocolate milk, which is methemoglobin.
Methemoglobin. So it's a darkened, it's an oxidized hemoglobin, a darkened hemoglobin?
It looks exactly like chocolate milk.
Wow.
Instead of red or purple or black. And it's only caused by one thing, and that is nitrate poisoning. It's the only thing that will cause it. And so I knew immediately it was a nitrate poisoning thing. So I said, did you use extra fertilizer in your crops? He said, no, I didn't. I said, well, I need a water sample, and I need some, bring it in tomorrow. And as I'm finishing the autopsies, every one of these lambs, instead of having thyroid glands the size of a lima bean, one lobe on each side, each one the size of a lima bean, each one was the size of a plum, and when you cut through it, instead of being like a beet, you know, firm and crisp, it, when you cut through it, it was like blackberry jam.
So it's like rotten and decaying.
Yes, yes. And so I knew that these lambs, and every one of them had the same problem. These were six-month-old lambs. They had two-inch wool. They were beautiful. I put 10 of them in my freezer and ate them, right? There was nothing wrong with them, except that they had goiter and met hemoglobin. And it turns out that the neighbor had bought some fertilizer, high nitrate fertilizer to get more corn for his bang for his buck, and it was uphill and rained and got down this guy's well. Well, did all the chemistry on the water, the feed, the lamb's blood and the liver and everything. And what happened was, why did 500 of them die in one night? And so I figured, okay, it has to do with metabolism and temperature and stuff. Well, it was December, and in Missouri, in December, you can have a day like today. It could be 50 degrees in December in Missouri. And it's been like 42, 50, 36, 38. Well, the night they all died, it was 19 degrees. It just dropped to 19 degrees, and they all died of hypothermia.
Their metabolism was off.
Yeah, their thyroid gland wasn't working, so wow. They couldn't maintain their body temperature. 500 lambs died of hypothermia in one night. Wrote that up, got it published in the National Journal of the American Veterinary Medical Association,
wow,
and also international journals, and I became instantly known as a student worldwide.
Awesome. And you're 22 at the time?
22, yeah.
That's awesome. So I think it's really important that people understand that you have a lot of great, incredible wisdom and intuition when it comes to nutrition and chemistry, but it comes from actually working with the tissue hands-on.
Yes.
You actually saw what these nutritional deficiencies do to the tissue, to
yes,
the organ systems of the body. And
yeah,
I think people need to recognize this is not just theory, and this is not just book learning. This is actually hands-on understanding about what nutrition does to the body in terms of its organ, the body's organ structure, and the body's cell structure, and the body's tissue structure. That's super important. There's not a lot of people out there who are pathologists or have a pathology background and a nutritional background as well.
And a physician. And a veterinarian.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's
well,
right.
Well, the thing that followed up from that was I was working with Marlon Perkins as a kid during high school, and he got me a job doing
that's the Wild Kingdom.
Wild Kingdom Mutual,
yeah,
of Omaha,
yeah.
Marlon Perkins, yep. And he got me a job in Africa on the White Rhino project, which had to do with saving the white rhino. It was one of those conservation projects. And I was able to get 200 of them, bring them back to the United States, caught them. And so if you see a white rhino in a zoo or a wild animal park, it's either one that I caught or maybe offspring. Well, because of that paper, Perkins, and this was the time when pollution was being brought to the surface by Silent Spring, you know, the movie
Rachel Carson,
the book and so forth. And he was very good. He thought, you know, we have all these animals dying from natural causes in zoos. Maybe pollution has something to do with it. Kind of like the canary in the mine concept,
right.
Like the old Welsh coal miners. If the gases got in the mine, the canaries would drop off the perch long before the men would die, and they could run out before they blew up.
So extinct canary in the coal mine, or animals that were becoming extinct.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so he said, we're wasting this material. We need to have, and I know a guy, Wallach, because I'd give him copies of that paper on the lambs.
Oh, wow.
So he pulls me back out of Africa, and he made me the chief pathologist in that project, which combined the services of the Shaw's Botanical Gardens in St. Louis, the zoo, and the biology department of Washington University. And so it was called the Center for the Biology of Natural Systems. And to make a long story short, over a period of 12 years, I did over 20,000 autopsies, and over 17,500 were on over 454 species of zoo animals, 3,000 human beings who lived in close proximity to the zoo. And the book that came out of it is 1,200 pages. It's in the Smithsonian
That's
Institute
awesome.
As a national treasure. Well, they were shipping me all over the place.
Well, what struck you, what hit you the most? 12,000 autopsies, mm-hmm. That's a lot of tissue.
20,000.
20,000 autopsies. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of tissue you're
yep.
looking at. What struck you the most? What was the most, made the biggest impression on you from looking at all that tissue?
Well, pharmacist bend.
Yes.
The most profound finding, and this was sort of in the summary of there was like 75 scientific papers that came out, published in international journals. I mean, this was a big project. National Institutes of Health, $25 million, which is a lot of money back then. It was chump change now, but back then it was a lot of money for a 24-year-old kid, right? And so the profound bottom line finding was, and this was published now, every animal and every human being who dies of natural causes dies of a nutritional deficiency
That's awesome.
Disease.
That's awesome.
Pollution was kind of a background thing, and in some cases it contributed to it. And that's, those are another long stories.
But they could have handled the pollution if they were nutritionally
solid.
That's
exactly right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's beautiful. So now this is 1962.
1962.
This is 1962. So take us forward, because you didn't start to become well known, and the Dead Doctors, Don't Lie, didn't hit
until
for another
1993.
Until 1993. So take us forward from 1962 through the 60s. What's going through your head as you're seeing that there's this problem with nutritional deficiencies, and it must have hit you that, hey, we got a big problem here.
We knew it was a big problem, and when I was in Africa for that 2 years working in the White Rhino Project, I was still studying nutrition because I wanted to know what elephants were eating, where they were getting their minerals, where they were getting their vitamins. We were testing water and testing the leaves on the trees and the bark that they were eating and so forth, and writing papers from that too and so forth. And when it came back and began to do these autopsies, they would send me, the National Institutes of Health and the National Science Foundation would send me to different facilities, because some facilities had whales and some didn't. Some facilities had walruses and some had gorillas and didn't. And so they wanted me to do autopsies or draw blood samples or whatever I had to do to get as many species involved in this project. Well, they actually, after the time at the St. Louis Zoo, they sent me to the Brookfield Zoo in Chicago because they had whales, and they had the Shedd Aquarium with dolphins, and they had the Brookfield Zoo and the Lincoln Park Zoo, so the number of species went way up. And I was walking into this office, and I'm unpacking, and there's two biologists there who are getting ready to go on an expedition into Alaska to catch some wild Arctic foxes. And I said, "Oh, that sounds like an interesting project. Why are you doing that?" They said, "Well, we have a pair of Arctic foxes here at the zoo, at the Brookfield Zoo in Chicago, and they must have some terrible gene, because Arctic foxes normally have 10 to 12 kits in their litter, and they were only having 3 to 5 kits, and they're always born with this birth defect. So they have this terrible genetic problem. So we want to get some wild genes and bring that in and reconfigure the genes and so forth." They said, "Well, tell me about it." And they said, "Well, 5 years earlier, you know, the babies were born with neural tube defects, and 4 years earlier, they were born with no limbs. 3 years earlier, they're born with no diaphragm, so they all suffocated to death."
All different things.
All different things. Yeah. Every year is a different thing. And then the last year, they had cleft palates. And I said, "Well, it's not genetic, because it'd be the same birth defect. It'd be like the same birth defect year after year."
If it's one gene, it'd be the same problem.
Exactly. He says, "What are you feeding them?" "Ground up horse meat." And they said, "Well, are you giving them any vitamins and minerals?" "No, because they're meat eaters. We just give them meat." And so I knew what the problem was right away. So I said, "Okay, I'll tell you what. Since your guys are leaving this week, why don't you get them off a display? They're imperfect." I play to their beliefs, right? So I said, "They're imperfect specimens anyway. Give them to me. Let me kind of work on them and do some tests on them." And they were happy with that. They brought them up there. And when they left, I went to the grocery store and bought some dog food for toy dogs. And I gave it to the foxes. Within a couple of months, they had a normal litter of 12 babies. So I did the thing that a good farmer would do. I inbred them, right? I bred the mother to the sons, the father to the daughters, the brother to the sisters. And by doing that, like, I had 300 foxes very quickly.
Right.
And then I inbred them. And I inbred them. By the time 3 years went by, I had over a couple of thousand foxes. And they were in
healthy.
The reptile house, the bird house, the administration
healthy
building.
Healthy foxes.
All perfectly healthy. Yeah. Not a single defect in any of them, because they're all getting dog food, which is perfect.
Well, I think what you're talking about here is so interesting, because this is the early, this is the middle 60s now we're talking?
This is the early 60s, yeah.
Well, today, the cutting edge in science and in genetics is not genetics at all. It's epigenetics, mm-hmm. correct? So what you were doing 30 years ago
was epigenetics.
Yes. I wonder if you could tell the folks a little bit about the whole idea of epigenetics, how epigenetics relates to genetics, and how nutrition relates to epigenetics.
Well, you have to appreciate how the medical mind thinks, pharmacist Ben. You know this, being
right.
a pharmacist. But for our viewers here, the medical mind is that they get a theory, and everything belongs to that theory. For instance, back in the days of the cavemen, there were witch doctors and shamans. Everything was caused by evil spirits.
Right.
And then there was alchemists, and it had to do with
distillation,
and turning lead into gold and all that kind of stuff, and sprinkling.
If all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And then it went into spontaneous generation, because they didn't know about germs yet, and they thought that life spontaneously generated from nothing. And then along came Van Leeuwenhoek, the Dutch he was actually a spectacle maker, made eyeglasses, and he
invented the microscope.
Yeah, but he put two lenses instead of one lens for your right eye, one lens for your left eye. He put one
compound,
lens on top of the other.
Made a compound lens.
Yeah, made a compound microscope, and he looked at pond water. He sees all these little animals floating around. He writes it up. Well, Pasteur gets he's a guy who's working on wine, trying to keep it from going sour and going to vinegar.
That, yeah.
And that's what he came up with, pasteurization.
Yeast. He was studying yeast.
Yeah, he was studying yeast, exactly. And so once he learned that it was a living thing, he couldn't see it because he didn't have a microscope. Once he had a microscope, he could see the little yeast buds and budding and growing.
So Pasteur was a contemporary.
Oh, yeah, of Van Leeuwenhoek.
Okay.
Yep. And he immediately knew that spontaneous generation was not the thing. He knew things were caused by these germs. That's where the germ theory
right.
came from. And then, of course, he was the first one to actually practically make vaccines, although there was a medical doctor in England by the name of Jenner who was involved.
Got a smallpox guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so when you had Pasteur, he actually had to, he took 25 sheep in the center of Paris. He set up pens, artificial pens or temporary pens. He had 25 sheep for anthrax. He had 25 sheep. He didn't. He gave anthrax to all 50. And the ones that were vaccinated, 24 of them survived, and one died. And the ones that didn't have vaccines, they all died. And so the press was there, and it was everybody agreed that he knew the answer to anthrax, and so the medical system couldn't argue with it because the press had already made it a fait accompli, right? And then comes along Mendel and Darwin, right? And Darwin's talking about how things evolve in the Galapagos Islands, and he'd see all these different finches, which are really the same species, but they had different colors and different beaks, but they were the same species. And that's because it took a little adaption in each of the different islands to survive, the predators and things.
That's where he came up with the theory of evolution, by watching the finches?
Well, watching the finches.
Uh-huh.
That's where he got that idea. And he knew there was something being passed on from one generation, because they could, the ones who were successful had some adaption, right? That was the word, adaption. And the ones that couldn't adapt got eaten by the predators.
This is the beginnings of the genetic theory.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
something being passed on, some information passed on from parent to offspring.
Exactly. And then here's Mendel, who's this monk, right? And he's growing peas, and he's studying peas, which the monks love to eat. And he was studying which he could get the best peas. And he learned that there was something being passed on, that the color of the pea flowers, and the whether they're wrinkled or smooth or they're big or they're small, and he could pass on these traits. And so he talked about threads, and he knew that something was being passed on.
He literally said threads?
Mm-hmm. He said threads are being passed on. Threads of life are being passed on. Carrying information was his words.
Wow.
We're talking about in the early 1800s, yeah. And so that was the beginning of the genetic theory. Along comes people like Linus Pauling and Watson and Crick, and they were able to actually tell you the structure of a chromosome and so forth and double helix and how traits like eye color and skin color and hair color are being passed on and so forth.
Linus Pauling was in on the whole genetic thing as well.
Well, he was actually the first one. He was actually cheated. He should have actually gotten part of that Nobel Prize that Watson and Crick did, because he came up with a helix He proposed that 10 years before they came along. They were just in their 20s, and he'd proposed it 10 years earlier.
Wow.
But they were actually able to do it and show it. But so he really should have gotten some part of that Nobel Prize, but he didn't. But at any rate, then along comes all the genome thing, right? So suddenly genetics is going to solve everything.
Right.
They're just every time they have a new theory, it solves everything.
Right.
Okay, and of course the genetic theory was fought for a long time, just like the Earth is flat theory was tried to be defended by the holders of that theory, until Columbus came along, who was an ignorant Portuguese seaman, right?
He said the Earth was not flat.
He's the guy sailing out there.
Yeah,
he knew
the Earth wasn't
flat. And so it comes down to perceptions and what you know and so forth. They were limited. So at any rate, my revelation, if you will, back when I was 9 years old, that diseases could be caused by nutritional deficiency, I learned everything I could about nutrition. Of course, in agriculture school, we learned that we could prevent and cure as many as 900 different diseases in animals with nutrition that in medical school they tell them are genetic.
Did you know that there was it was really a nutritional and epigenetic component, that the nutrition was actually changing the genes?
Yes, well, no, we didn't have the word epigenetic
at
that
time. Nutrition was changing the genes, though, that lack of nutrition was affecting the genetics?
And now that's a better word, affecting, okay? They weren't changing the genes.
Affecting.
Affecting, because the genes are like a factory. The chromosomes are like a factory. Can you build any factory without raw materials or parts?
No.
Without labors and energy?
Of course not.
No. Okay, so a gene and a chromosome is the same way. It's just a blueprint.
Right.
A gene and a chromosome is just a blueprint,
right.
Nothing else. So you
right.
put a gene and a chromosome in a bucket of saline and say, okay, come on, boys, go to work and make something. Ain't nothing happening.
Right.
You still
the gene
need...
that makes protein. The blueprint is just there to make the protein. You still need the raw materials to make the protein.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so we learned in agricultural school that we could prevent and cure every disease you can think of. We can prevent and cure, we can prevent every birth defect. Many of them you could cure. Some of them, like cleft palate, is a surgical case, right? And, for instance, congestive heart failure, the most common cause of heart disease, a death in adults in America, it's a deficiency of a single vitamin. In fact, when I went to the next thing after the foxes in the Brookfield Zoo, the Shedd Aquarium there in Chicago, they called me over and said, hey, we hear you're wanting to do autopsies on some cetaceans, which are whales and dolphins and things. Yep. They said, well, we got a freshwater dolphin here from the Ganges River in India, just died, and we get 10 or 12 of them every year, and in the spring and by the fall, they're all dead. This is pretty typical. Why don't you give us your thoughts on what's happening here? So I go over there and cut that thing open. First thing, I knew immediately what it was. It was the heart of a 300-pound freshwater dolphin is as big as your fist. This dolphin's heart was as big as a basketball. He died of congestive heart failure, which is a deficiency of a single vitamin. So I said, are you giving these dolphins any vitamins? No, we're feeding them whole fish. They eat fish, so we just give them whole fish. I said, tell me what species of fish, because there are certain fish in their tissues, they have an enzyme that kills that vitamin.
You're not talking about vitamin C?
No. Thiamin.
Thiamin.
Thiaminase. Uh-huh. There's a thiaminase in the tissue of smelt. They're feeding because of the size. The smelt was the perfect food from size standpoint for these freshwater dolphins.
They didn't have any thiamin.
They didn't have any thiamin because they weren't putting a multiple and extra thiamin in the mouth of those fish when they fed them to the little freshwater dolphins. So, you know, told them to change the type of fish they were feeding them, give them a multiple and some extra B vitamins with a lot of thiamin, stop the deaths in the freshwater dolphins at the Shedd Aquarium. And so these are the things I could do with nutrition. And here's all these biologists. I mean, these guys are very skilled, very well-trained biologists when it came to behavior of the animals and their dynamics in captivity and so on, and how they reacted for territories with one male against the other, that kind of stuff.
Behavioralists.
Yeah, exactly.
But they weren't biochemists. They were biologists, but they weren't biochemists.
They were biologists, but they weren't biochemists.
Yeah.
And so I could come in and see something very simple that I'd been studying for 10, 15, 20 years and see it in a heartbeat, where they could look at it and they couldn't recognize it.
Now, thiamin is a fascinating vitamin. Mm-hmm. That's the beriberi vitamin.
Exactly.
That's the vitamin that they were given. Tell the story about the chickens and the rice polishings.
Well, beriberi is a very interesting disease. Sailors, of course, used to die from this by the thousands every year. And as they went around the world and their sea voyages were longer and longer and longer, more and more sailors, I mean, two-thirds of the crew would be death from beriberi by the time they came home, particularly as time went along, because they demanded modern food. And modern food to them meant polished rice, white rice, instead of brown rice. Because that's what rich people ate, and so they wanted that as part of their demand. If we're going to go on this long sea voyage, we want polished rice. Okay. And two-thirds of the crew would die from beriberi. Well, first of all, they get a dementia called Korsakoff syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
Which is caused by a thiamin deficiency. Yeah. And then they would get congestive heart failure.
It's like a cure for Korsakoff syndrome is thiamin.
I cure people in a week.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing, right?
But I give them 26,000 times the minimum daily requirement. I hedge my bet, right? Okay. So, at any rate, all these diseases that these Japanese naval surgeons were really the first ones to recognize there's some problem here when they fed these sailors this polished rice. But the admiralty, you know, the big guys up there, the admiral say, well, listen, these guys are demanding this. This has nothing to do with it. It's got to be some bug. They thought it was a bug.
Wow. What year are we talking here?
We're talking about the late 1700s.
Wow.
Okay, in the 18th century. And Europeans get the credit for discovering it, but it was really these Japanese naval surgeons.
It was a Polish chemist.
Kaiser Funk.
Yeah. Who came
up with
it.
Was his name, yeah. But, well, he actually identified it. But before that, the Japanese naval surgeons.
Knew there was something in there.
They knew there was something in the bran of the rice, in the brown covering, the hull on the rice, could prevent and reverse that disease. And they would all die of congestive heart failure, but they would all go crazy. They'd lose their minds, Korsakoff syndrome, before they died
and
of congestive
alcohol,
heart failure.
People who drink alcohol, that deactivates thiamin somehow.
Well, sure. Well, alcohol is a liquid sugar, and it makes
thiamin is used for metabolizing the alcohol.
And so when you take in sugar or alcohol, it makes a deficiency worse.
Talk about ADD, maybe. How about B1 deficiency, subclinical B1 deficiency for kids who have ADD? They're eating sugar. Maybe they don't need Ritalin. Maybe they need something like thiamine. Or how about subclinical issues? You know, we talk about the big things like congestive heart failure and beriberi. But what are the impacts of subclinical thiamine deficiency, where maybe they're just not getting enough thiamine? What are the impacts on our kids? And
okay, well, that's a good one. Let's talk about ADD, ADHD, autism. Now, back when I was a kid, there was no such thing as those things, right? In the year 1980. In 1980, it was one out of 150,000 kids had autism. In the year 2000, it's one out of 150. Today, it's one out of 88 is the new. It just came out last week.
Wow.
One out of 88 now has autism.
Wow.
And basically, when I was a kid, all four of my grandparents were from Eastern Europe. They were beet farmers and beef farmers. And so for breakfast, I would have cheese and beets and beef and eggs and...
No Cheerios?
No.
No cornflakes?
No. Not when I was a little baby. Nope. And we didn't have those types of diseases. Well, here comes now... 20 years later, kids are being fed on these box cereals full of processed carbohydrates with sugar on it, and they're getting apple juice.
Right.
How can you build a brain, which is two-thirds by weight, 75% by weight, is cholesterol and good fats? Okay? And so now all they're getting is carbohydrates and sugar, and they're going crazy.
Right. So not only are they deficient, but it's costing them nutrients to process all that stuff.
Exactly. So it makes the nutritional deficiencies worse.
Even worse, right.
Right. And so simply, I take kids that haven't spoken in 11 years. You start feeding them eggs. You get them on the 90 essential nutrients, which is what we feed animals, the 90 essential nutrients, 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 essential amino acids, 3 essential fatty acids. And after 11 years of not speaking, I have kids who can read the Bible out loud in churches.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Doc, I say this on my radio show all the time. I say, you're going to think it's a miracle, but it's not a miracle. This is the way the body works, because
yep.
you give the body what it needs and it will respond. This amazing system, this amazing divine system.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals, but the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com. Sign up as a distributor and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com.
You touched on cholesterol. I definitely want to talk about cholesterol.
Okay.
But before I get to that, my favorite mineral, you know, in the world of nutrition, you get favorites, right? You probably have your favorites. And
sure.
I know one of them that's one of my personal favorites, and I know is one of yours, is selenium.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about selenium, this incredible, incredible mineral, and some of the things that you can use it for. And I want you to pay special attention on how selenium is involved with the thyroid, how selenium is involved with diabetes, and all the different things that you can use with this incredible mineral that, by the way, is active in microgram quantities, the tiniest of quantities. Maybe touch on that a little bit.
Okay, as you say, selenium is one of those wonderful trace minerals, which is an essential nutrient. We need it. We can't live without it. And it has many functions. It's a structural mineral when it comes to chromosomes, right?
Epigenetics,
we'll get into that, right? But it's a structural piece in the actual normal double helix.
Is it one of the fingers that you were talking
it's
about?
It's one of the metallic fingers that keeps this double helix of the chromosome in the proper distance of each other. There's a little strut there. In the middle of these struts, there's all these different minerals, and selenium is one of them.
Wow. So the helix itself is an incredibly organized structure, mm-hmm. and every little component of it is key. The distance that the nucleotides are from each other, all of that is tightly, tightly regulated, and minerals like selenium are involved in making sure that this structure stays intact. That's what the fingers are.
Exactly. And when you have a deficiency of selenium, many things happen. In the biochemical level, you can't recycle glutathione, which is one of the most potent antioxidants made by the body.
The most, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And it's used to protect you from cancer and fend off inflammation in your arteries so you don't get clogged arteries and that kind of stuff. But if you don't have enough selenium, you use one molecule of glutathione and it sort of deactivates. But when you have selenium, you can recycle that one molecule of glutathione 1,000 times.
That's awesome.
That's very awesome. And then it protects your brain from MS. When you have MS, you have a terrible, terrible selenium deficiency because it allows the free radical damage to the myelin, the white matter of the brain again, and you get these lesions in the brain about the size of a lima bean that cause MS.
So supplementing with selenium
can prevent or reverse MS.
Wow.
Along with the 90 essential nutrients. You can't buy it not by itself.
That's right. So 200 micrograms to 400 micrograms?
What do you well, mean? I like to be a little heavy-handed.
600?
I like to be a little heavy-handed.
800?
A milligram, yeah.
A milligram
1,000 micrograms, yeah.
Okay.
When you have these diseases, you need to use a bigger hammer, right?
Okay.
HIV. You can prevent HIV from mutating to AIDS by supplementing with selenium.
Wow.
1 milligram a day. What's the difference between Arthur Ashe, the great black tennis player, and Magic Johnson, the great black basketball player? One is dead, one's alive.
Yeah.
One supplementing with selenium, one didn't.
Is that that's what Magic Johnson's doing? Oh, that's interesting.
Now,
how about just a common cold or just like flus and that kind of thing?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
I'm getting there. It's very good. You're on top of it.
All right.
But I also, it's one of the things that they actually discovered. Dr. Gerhard Schrauser, a grand man, he's the guy who discovered that selenium is an essential nutrient back in 1957.
They didn't consider it essential then.
No, they considered it a poison.
Yes,
exactly.
Right.
They thought it was a poison. Even medical doctors today still think it's a poison.
Yeah.
But it actually was discovered to be an essential nutrient. And the disease he was looking at was liver necrosis, the death of your liver. If you survive death of your liver, you got cirrhosis of the liver, right? And this is all caused by not drinking, because 99% of the people who get liver cirrhosis never took a drink of alcohol in their life.
Right.
It's a selenium deficiency.
Wow.
I get people off the liver transplant list all
the
time.
Wow, wow, wow. So that's a big problem today, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Mm-hmm. That's a huge problem.
Fatty liver, primary sclerosing cholangitis, liver cirrhosis.
Yeah.
I've had people, pharmacists, Ben, who've had 32 liver operations at Harvard Medical School. Their livers are the size of an Oreo cookie, and I rebuild them in 2 months to a normal liver. Just using the 90 essential nutrients and extra selenium.
Right.
Okay. And then there's cataracts are caused by a selenium deficiency and free radical damage, eating fried foods, free radical damage to the lens of the eye and no selenium to protect it. And then you get cardiomyopathy heart disease. I've done Keyshan syndrome.
That's right.
I've done 1,200 autopsies on kids under the age of 10 in Keyshan province, China. 1,200 autopsies. Nobody else has ever done that.
They're all deficient.
They're all deficient in selenium. And partially because of our work there in China, every school kid, when you go to kindergarten, they get a multiple and a capsule of selenium.
Selenium.
We've wiped out cardiomyopathy heart disease in children in China.
That's awesome.
Is that awesome?
That's awesome. Now, isn't there an animal correlate to this Keyshan syndrome, selenium deficiency?
Yes.
A sheep?
Well, in every animal you can name, there's a correlation. But in pigs, they call it mulberry heart disease. In sheep, they call it stiff lamb disease, because when they get heart disease, they kind of walk with arch back and they're kind of stiff. And in cattle, they call it white muscle disease, because when you cut through the heart, instead of having this beautiful kind of reddish purple heart color, it looks like a good perch muscle. It's white. So they call it white muscle disease. And you can prevent it with
a little bit of selenium.
Well, with the 90 essential nutrients plus extra selenium. If they get it and they survive the first heart attack, or you catch it with just arrhythmias in their heart, you give them the selenium, it goes away.
How about for the thyroid?
The thyroid gland, of course, there's actually a syndrome called Wilson syndrome. The question is, how many nutrients does your thyroid require?
A lot, probably. No.
All 90.
Yeah.
Now, if you ask a physician, they'll say iodine,
right,
because it's part of the structure
right
of the thyroxine hormone. But that's only the part of the structure. But for the thyroid gland to work, it needs all 90.
Of course.
Duh. Right? And so a lot of times when they look at the T3, T4, the TSH, and all that kind of stuff, really what they're looking for is iodine levels. Hmm? And so you can be perfect. They say, well, we don't know why you're having all these symptoms of thyroid disease. Because, we give them iodine and nothing changes. Well, that's because it's a selenium deficiency.
That's interesting. Well, selenium is involved in the hormone as well.
Part of the structure, but it actually is, even equally importantly, it's part of the process of making the hormone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And as is copper and everything else. And then, of course, it's necessary for the health of your muscles. Muscular dystrophy is a selenium deficiency.
Wow.
Now, a fellow by the name of Marvin Rapanai, who grew up Amish, and he went in and became a Navy SEAL. Going from the Amish world to the Navy SEAL, he comes back after 20 years in the SEALs. He goes back a worldly man now, And he sees all these kids dying of muscular dystrophy in the Amish community. And so I go there and I say, well, this is what we see in calves that have muscular dystrophy or white muscle disease. And it's a selenium deficiency. So we went to Purdue University, and sure enough, in Indiana, wherever these kids are that have muscular dystrophy, there's always a selenium deficiency in the soil. So we started giving them the 90 essential nutrients, giving them extra selenium, and the muscular dystrophy goes away in a couple of weeks. Even if they've been in wheelchairs for years, we get them out of the wheelchair and they go play basketball. So we send all this information to Jerry Lewis. This is a gospel truth story now. We send all this information to Jerry Lewis. 5 years.
He must have loved it.
He went crazy, positive. He loves it.
Yeah.
I said, now, Jerry, we're not asking for money. We already know the cause, prevention, and cure of muscular dystrophy in kids. We already know this. We just think it's appropriate that we offer to you the opportunity to make the news release because you're the guy.
Muscular dystrophy.
You are, they're Jerry's kids,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you're the obvious guy to make the news release if you want to. If you say no, we'll be happy, but at least my conscience is okay because I've given you the opportunity. He gets excited. He takes it to the medical committee and the Muscular Dystrophy Foundation.
Excited.
They fire Jerry Lewis. That's why Jerry Lewis has not been on the telethon for the last 2 years.
Oh, that's an amazing story.
And they sent him on a cruise. They actually bought him a ticket to say, we have a non-disclosure contract with you, Jerry. You can lose everything. We'll sue you for everything if you bring this up. And so we're sending you on a cruise. Go enjoy yourself.
And don't bring it up again.
We want you away from here.
Wow.
When we're having this telethon this year, because everybody's going to say, well, where's Jerry?
For the last cruise.
It's over with.
That's a great story.
And so they fired Jerry Lewis because we discovered the cause, prevention, cure of, and I knew what it was for a long time, but until Marvin Ropp came back from being a Navy SEAL and introduced me to the Amish community, I didn't have access to those kids.
So selenium must for muscular dystrophy. But I think your point's well taken that you have to have the entire mighty 90. These things are specific for disease states, but the entire milieu of the body has to be nutriated.
That's right, because everything kind of works together, and if you have to have the metabolism to be able to repair yourself. You have to have the metabolism to operate just in life. And so to think you can cherry-pick one nutrient, this is one of the bad things the medical system does.
Allopathic nutrition, I call it.
Yes.
Where you just use a nutrient like it's one kind of drug, one kind of disease.
Exactly, using a nutrient as a drug.
Yeah.
Instead of using the whole – I liken it to grandma's recipe – for an Asian food cake, for instance. And she dies and she leaves her secret recipe to her favorite granddaughter, right?
Right.
But the granddaughter doesn't like some of the ingredients. She says, I really don't like eggs because of cholesterol theory, right?
It's not going to be the same cake.
And so you leave the eggs out and all you get is a angel food crepe.
Yeah.
You know,
right. Because all the ingredients work together.
Exactly.
And the Mighty 90 works together the same way.
Yeah.
All right. So there's so many things I want to talk about, but I don't think any conversation with Dr. Wallach would be complete without talking about colloidal minerals.
Okay.
And first of all, there seems to be a lot of misunderstanding. People don't really understand what exactly a colloidal mineral is. And I think it makes sense that there'd be misunderstandings. You know, Albert Einstein and some of the great physicists, they studied colloidal solutions, colloidal suspensions. They were so fascinated with how these things work and how they interact with the water and the electrical nature of all that. Why don't you tell folks, first of all, tell folks how you discovered the power of colloidal minerals. And exactly what are colloidal minerals and why are they so special and so effective?
Okay, well, thank you, Pharmacist Ben. Back again in the late 80s, I was working with some of the alternative cancer hospitals in Mexico. Now, they invited me to come do some things with them. And that's a long story how I got there, but that's another time. But at any rate, one of the problems I had was getting all the nutrients that people needed because most people wouldn't eat calf pellets and dog food and things like that, right?
Right.
And so I had to find a way because in human supplies, it was very difficult to get things. And so I needed a source of some really weird trace elements and rare earths, okay, like gallium, ytterbium, yttrium, neodymium, praseodymium.
Right. Which the body needs.
You get disease if you don't have them. Most doctors, you ask them about those.
Ytterbium deficiencies.
Rare earth, europium. Yeah, you ask them about those things, doctors look at you like a deer in the headlight. They've never heard of them, right? And so I was looking for those things. Well, here at one of these alternative cancer hospitals is a little gallon glass jug, and it says, take an ounce of this with every meal. And I tasted, woo, it kind of shrunk wrap your lips over your teeth. It was very tart.
Right, minerals.
Yep. And so I said, what is this? They said, well, it's this stuff that comes out of the mountains and it has all these different minerals in it. So I took it to Dr. Schrauser, University of California. I said, analyze it. And it had 77 minerals in it, including all these really weird trace minerals and rare earths. Exactly what I was looking for. To make this, as what's turned out now, to be the Alex Pack, right?
Right.
You got it?
Right.
But that was back in 1985. I had been looking for something, but it was so expensive.
Have all the trace. You were looking for something that would have all those trace minerals.
And the rare earths. And if we were to put it together one by one by one, it would cost $1,000 an hour to take that stuff, right? And so it's too expensive. So here's a natural source.
Wow.
And it had everything in there in optimal amounts. I mean, I really got excited because I said, now I've got the tool that I can bring this to the general public, right?
Wow.
Well, a colloid is actually a mineral that's in suspension rather than in solution.
So it doesn't dissolve, it hangs.
It hangs in there. Now, how does that do that? You've heard of Brownian movement,
sure.
Right? Well, all these particles are the same charge, and so they repel each other. And so they stay in suspension by their own energy because they're repelling each other like little magnets.
That's awesome.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah. So it's high, this is a highly electrically charged solution.
That's right.
It's like a magnetic solution.
But they're all the same charge.
Right.
That's the secret. They're all the same charge.
Right. That's how they're repelling.
Yeah, that's right. Brownian movement, and they knew about that for a long time, but you're talking about one nutrient, one mineral, but here's one with 77 minerals in there.
Wow.
And there's this, it's almost like a liquid alloy of 77 minerals.
Wow.
And, for instance, if you take a solution, a liter of a solution, you can maximize whatever you can get in there, you get 985 or 989 milligrams. That's all you can get into a solution. There's only so much room in between the water molecules. Now, in a suspension, I can get 36,000 milligrams.
How do you do that?
Ah, kidneys, right? I can get 36,000 milligrams. Well, when you taste that, that'll shred the enamel off your teeth. It's so acid. So I had to cut it down to 19,000 milligrams. But now we're getting up into the dosage rates, so you don't have to drink 7 gallons a day. I had to concentrate it down. I mean, all these little mechanical factors I had to deal with, I had to concentrate it enough to where a human being could take a couple ounces and get enough. Nobody's going to drink 7 gallons a day to get enough, right?
But these are highly concentrated suspensions.
Yes, but I had to concentrate them more.
Wow.
Right, see? And so this is perfect for me because I could get 19,000 milligrams in a liter, 600 milligrams in an ounce.
That's amazing.
That's amazing, right?
That's amazing.
And so, but in a solution, I could only get 30 milligrams.
And so what accounts for that difference then?
Well, in a suspension, it doesn't matter how much room there is between the water molecules because these guys are in there keeping each other in suspension all the time. They never settle out.
They're self-suspending.
They never settle out.
Wow.
It's a perpetual motion machine.
So when you're actually drinking an electrical energy, you're drinking magnetism.
Of a sorts, yeah.
So you're drinking a magnetic solution. So
yes.
Would you say that the effect on the body is it amps up the magnetic energy?
If you look at the heart, for instance, which is an electrical thing,
right?
When people start getting palpitations, they are having an electrical conduction problem. So you give them selenium in a colloidal form. Problem solved.
Wow.
Okay. And so it's that simple. But at any rate, then I was able to make liquids. Of course, I'm considered the father of liquid supplementation at that level. And the initial product we had was just what we called plant minerals.
I remember that.
Yeah, 77 plant minerals, which contain all 60 essential minerals in optimal amounts, 1 ounce per 100 pounds of body weight. And most people are deficient in minerals, so just taking those minerals made an enormous positive difference in people's lives. And then people were saying, well, what multiple do I take with it? So I had to come up with a multiple, and then you think it's tricky to add all the vitamins and amino acids and things to it. Now, I tried adding the fatty acid, turned it into soap.
I'm sure,
It became a solid.
You can't add fatty acid. But it's a miracle that you could add all that other stuff in there. That's some amazing formulations. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you something. I formulate for a living, and the formulations that you guys, Longevity's come up with some formulations that are absolutely stupendous, and it started off with that bottle of minerals.
We just kept adding things to it, and of course we'd run into the thing like turning into soap, and we had bottles exploding and stuff, and so in the early days it was quite adventurous. And then of course, right now we have in the Alex Pack, which you can buy by itself or part of the Alex Pack, I like the Alex because you got a complete thing, is the Beyond Tangerine. It has 245 nutrients in it.
That's a stupendous product.
Isn't that wild?
Stupendous product.
It has 300 milligrams of these minerals per serving. It has
Lots of B vitamins.
Well, mega doses.
Mega doses, yeah. right.
And then it has 115 super juices. This is not, we're not talking about a V8 here.
Right.
We're talking a V115.
That's amazing.
V115.
Yeah, V115, not V8. Right? Plus 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C,
yeah.
Plus copper, plus selenium.
Well, plus all 60 essential.
Plus is there glucosamine, I think.
Yes, there is.
Well, that's an amazing, amazing product. If people don't do anything but that, they're going to notice dramatic results.
Oh, huge, huge. And, of course, kids like it because it tastes good.
Tastes great. And then for absorption, that's another thing. You know, in pharmacy school, we study delivery. That's one of the main things we study is delivery. And they tell you, if you want to deliver things in the body and you don't want to use a suppository and you don't want to use an injection, drink the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually, in addition to the colloidal minerals, the nature of the colloids, the fact that it was in the way you could drink it and you would get instant absorption is so important because people have digestive problems. Everybody has digestive problems. Bypassing digestive problems with liquids. Go ahead.
Well, I'll answer that question in a second. But what we did was even, I thought, more fun. We take these colloids, which in themselves are very absorbable, right? And then
Tremendously absorbable.
Very absorbable compared to even solutions. And so then we turn it into a coffee crystal type technology.
Now, talk about that.
Well, coffee crystals are not actually like you're making an instant drink. Okay, because what we did was turn it into a brewed thing that has all these juices and vitamins and minerals and amino acids in it. We made these huge solutions, and then we freeze-dried it, and they turned into crystals. You just add water, and suddenly now it rehydrates. It rehydrates, becomes the original suspension again.
Is that what makes the BTT so special? It's like freeze-dried.
Yes.
Do you remember that commercial they used to have for the freeze-dried coffee?
Mm-hmm.
That whole...
That's the coffee crystals.
Yeah, it's the same idea.
And so we take a colloid, and we turn it into the coffee crystal technology.
So it recolloid. It becomes a colloid again.
It becomes a colloid again.
So the BTT is a colloidal suspension.
It's a colloid.
Not a solution.
And then we put it into resuspension.
When people reconstitute it...
It becomes a suspension again.
It becomes a suspension again. So they're actually drinking this colloidal liquid again.
Exactly.
Even though it's portable and you can carry it around.
And light, you can take it on the plane with you.
You can take it on the plane. That's great. All right, so cholesterol.
Okay.
I want to talk about cholesterol. Statin drugs, hundreds of millions of prescriptions are filled for statin drugs every year. Everybody's terrified of cholesterol. Somebody here was asking about eating eggs, and people don't want to eat eggs. They don't want to eat the yolk and eggs, and... There's so much misunderstandings about cholesterol. Please tell our listeners, tell the viewers a little bit about, first of all, what cholesterol is, why it's so important, and then how you can make sure that you have enough cholesterol in your body using dietary strategies.
Well, first of all, cholesterol is an important part of our human structure. Every cell wall is like 30% cholesterol.
Right.
Okay? Every cell wall, if the trillions and trillions of cells in your body, every one of them, 30% or more, in some cases 60% of the cell wall is cholesterol.
So you can't make cells without the stuff.
That's right. And cells won't work without it. They die without it. And then 75% of your brain weight, the white matter of your brain, the myelin, is cholesterol. Okay? If you don't have enough cholesterol, guess what you get? Alzheimer's disease. It's a physician-caused disease for lowering our cholesterol. Then you can't make sex hormones. Testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, and adrenal hormones are all steroid hormones. 95% by weight is cholesterol. Vitamin D3 is
cholesterol.
7-hydroxy-25 cholesterol, right?
Right. Cortisol, stress hormone.
Exactly. So
aldosterone.
Adrenal hormones, all these things are cholesterol. So you don't have enough cholesterol, you get erectile dysfunction, you get menopause, you get adrenal exhaustion, you get Alzheimer's disease.
All of it. How can this thing, this beautiful chemical, this beautiful molecule be so demonized in our culture? It's amazing to me.
Well, here's why. Because, again, biologists don't know anything about chemistry, right? Doctors don't know anything about nutrition.
Right.
So that's a maxim. Well, in 1971, after having done 20,000 autopsies, I wrote a paper which compared the plugged arteries in vegans versus plugged arteries in meat eaters. Looking at this cholesterol theory, right?
Well, the vegans are eating grains.
Well, grains, vegetables, fruits, and nuts. And guess who had the worst clogged arteries?
Vegans. Right.
Because of
there's
the
no cholesterol in meat.
Well, there was a little bit of cholesterol in the scarring of the arteries, and that's why in their brains they thought it was a cholesterol. But there was turbulence in there, and the body's putting cholesterol, and they're trying to smooth it out. You know, like these nonstick pans. The body's response was to throw cholesterol at it, trying to smooth out the turbulence.
Now, when people eat meat, is there cholesterol in steak? Is there actually cholesterol molecule, even after it's cooked and after it's processed?
As long as you don't burn it. Okay, now, But here's the beauty of that study. 1971, 20,000 autopsies, and they come out, and this is published in an international Danish pathology journal, Acta Pathologica, translated into six languages. This went around. Millions of doctors, millions of pathologists all over the world read this. Now, they all laughed at me because they were saying, well, Wallach must be sniffing glue because cholesterol causes heart disease. Well, guess what? Where were vegans getting their cholesterol? They're not eating meat. They're not eating eggs.
They're making it.
The oils in the grains are oxidizing because they were stored improperly.
So now...
And then they stir fry in extra, extra, extra virgin, virgin, virgin olive oil. You turn those oils into trans fatty acids and heterocyclic amines, right?
Right.
By heating them. They eat a lot of salad dressings.
So where's the cholesterol coming from?
From the body makes a little bit as a sort of, again,
a protective device?
Protective device. Uh-huh. Kind of like this nonstick pan again, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. But it came from your own body
so
making
it's upregulating it. The body's manufacturing system of cholesterol.
Yeah, but it's infinitesimally small. It wasn't even a factor. But they picked, that's the only strange thing that was in there, right? And so they picked that out for some reason. And they came up with these statin drugs to lower cholesterol.
Uh-huh.
Well, here comes now, 41 years later, the FDA in Science News just a couple of weeks ago came out and said, uh-oh, Houston, we have a problem. They put out new warnings on statin drugs saying
diabetes.
Increases your risk of diabetes by 50%, increases your risk of Alzheimer's disease by 100%.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals. But the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com. Sign up as a distributor and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com.
The FDA in Science News just a couple of weeks ago came out and said, uh-oh, Houston, we have a problem. They put out new warnings on statin drugs saying
diabetes.
Increases your risk of diabetes by 50%, increases your risk of Alzheimer's disease by 100%.
Oh, that's amazing.
If you go on a cholesterol-restricted diet and you take cholesterol-lowering drugs, statin drugs, you will get Alzheimer's disease.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And I said that in 1971, and they all laughed at me.
Because you need cholesterol to make neurons.
That's right.
Make
brain cells. You must eat eggs. The egg is a perfect food. You start out with a chick on that egg the size of a lentil, as thick as a piece of paper, with the diameter of a lentil, right? I mean, we're talking about 3 or 4 millimeters in diameter, 1/10 of a millimeter thick. That's the chick, and there's the yolk and the white. That's all food for the chick. In 21 days of incubation, you have a chick with a beating heart and lungs and legs and all the muscles and feathers and skin and eyes and brain.
All from that little egg.
All from that little egg. And so it's a perfect food.
Yeah.
And so if you want to keep your brains, you want to have a great sex life, you want to have your adrenal glands that are happy, you don't want to have menopause, you don't want erectile dysfunction, you better be eating 6 to 10 to 12. I eat a minimum of 8 eggs a day. I try for 12 every day.
Where else can you get? What other foods would you recommend?
Eat the chicken skin, throw the chicken away. Just don't eat it fried, okay? You can eat...
Fish skin?
You get a little bit of cholesterol actually in salmon, in the fat underneath the salmon skin. You can get it from red meat. You can get it from lard and butter. You get a little bit of cholesterol in butter.
What do you think about, what nutrients would you use with your cholesterol? Any particular vitamin E or essential fatty acids?
Well, sure, you have to take the 90 essential nutrients, which includes vitamin E, and we're talking about selenium and vitamin A. All these things are antioxidants in their own right. Now, vitamin A, why did they call it vitamin A? Because it was the first one discovered. When it was discovered, over 4,000 years ago, by the Egyptians. They could get rid of night blindness, which we know is caused by vitamin A deficiency.
Yeah.
by giving people extracts of liver.
Liver.
They'd squeeze liver, get the juice out of the liver, give it to you, and night blindness would go away.
Vitamin A is a stupendously important vitamin as well. How about for the immune system, vitamin A for the immune system?
Of course, because it's an antioxidant.
Yeah.
It helps protect you from free radicals and also helps your immune system fight against organisms, transmitted organisms like bacteria and viruses and fungus and yeast and all kinds of stuff. So every one of the 90 essential nutrients is important. They're called essential nutrients. They're not optional nutrients.
The word essential, that's what that means. Mm-hmm. Now, real quick, I wonder if you could touch upon the digestive system. Mm-hmm. We got 80 million Americans with digestive problems. One out of three Americans is dealing with some kind of digestive issue. When we know with liquid nutrients, you can bypass a lot of that. But what would you recommend for folks in terms of not essential nutrients necessarily, but accessory nutrients that people can use to support digestive wellness?
Okay, well, first of all, the old theory used to be you are what you eat, right?
Right.
That's not right.
It's what you absorb.
You are what you absorb. Yeah. Very good. You are what you absorb.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so when you pick the right number, when you said 30% of Americans have a terrible digestive problem, Mayo Clinic came out in 2009 and said 30% of Americans have gluten intolerance. Now, there's some communities that eat a lot of grains because they're, you know, for whatever reason,
cheap.
Well, it's cheap. It's stored for years in case there's some imminent disaster, right? We're talking about the Amish, the Mennonites, the Hutterites, the Mormons, the Seventh-day Adventists are all vegetarians. They eat a lot of grains. They have 80% gluten intolerance.
Hmm.
Now, what that does is you lose the villi in your small intestines, and you get celiac disease, you get diverticulitis, you get irritable bowel syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease.
And you don't absorb your nutrients.
You lose 85% ability to absorb them. So what's 15% of nothing?
Nothing.
Very little.
Yeah.
Right? And so the problem we have now is all these people now are being told to eat whole grains. And so there's all this gluten intolerance happening. So people are not absorbing what little nutrition there might be naturally in the food.
Right.
And they're not supplementing. And so you have to get off of gluten. You have to supplement properly. And then 99% of these problems go away. When you're talking about diseases, for instance, like, you have a baby born with muscular dystrophy, cystic fibrosis, cleft palate, they're born deaf and all this kind of stuff. Invariably, the mother will be gluten intolerant. Because what little nutrients are in the food, she can't absorb them very efficiently.
So she's got a malnourished fetus.
She's got a malnourished fetus.
Wow.
It's not genetic.
Oh, yeah, it's malnourishment.
But here's the thing that gives doctors a little bit of hope that their theory is correct. Gluten intolerance is passed on through cord blood or breast milk. It's not genetic, but the glutens are passed on.
The allergens.
Well, they're not even allergens. It's not an allergy. It's an intolerance.
So, in other words, the proteins, the peptides are passed through in the milk, and the baby becomes intolerant to it as well.
Yes, exactly. Now, here's the deal. Nobody's allergic to poison ivy. Because there's no pollen involved, nobody eats it for salads, but everybody is intolerant of it. Now, you rub poison ivy on yourself, you don't get an allergic reaction.
You don't get an immune reaction.
Mm-mm. You have a contact dermatitis.
Right.
The same thing when you eat gluten and you have a gluten intolerance, you don't get an allergic reaction, you get a contact.
It's a mechanical issue. Would you say it's a mechanical?
It's a chemical irritant. You get a contact enteritis.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
So it's not necessarily an allergic reaction.
It is not an allergic reaction.
It's still an immune reaction, though.
No.
It's not even an immune reaction. Is it mechanical?
It's a chemical irritant.
Uh-huh. So gluten is an irritant.
Oh, yeah. It's a contact enteritis.
Bakers will get it, too. There's baker's dermatitis.
Well, yeah exactly. Yeah,
same
thing.
Idea.
And so what you do is you get these people on gluten-free diets. Their asthma goes away in 2 weeks.
It's amazing.
And you have a woman who's had 3 kids in a row with muscular dystrophy. You put her on a gluten-free diet. You give her the 90 essential nutrients appropriate for her body weight. You throw in some extra selenium. She'll never have another child with muscular dystrophy. She can have 10 more kids, but none of them will have muscular dystrophy because it's not genetic.
That's amazing. Now, are there other things in grains aside from gluten? Gluten gets all the press, but there's other things as well. Are there other proteins, other peptides?
Well, sure, there are allergens. You can get a wheat allergy, but it's not necessary to be gluten intolerant.
Uh-huh. Is grain a problematic food, in your opinion?
Yes, it is, because human beings were never designed to eat grain.
Yeah.
Now, the animals that do very well with grain are
they have
ruminants.
Extra stomachs.
They have 4 stomachs.
Yeah. So if we have 4 stomachs, maybe we'd be able
to
eat
that. Well, we'd be able to eat grain.
Yeah.
We have a single stomach, and we don't have the capacity to handle grains like an antelope and a buffalo, you know, a buffalo and the horses and cattle and sheep and goats and all these animals with 4 stomachs. When you look around the world, other than one-celled animals, the 4-stomach animals are in the most universal form. They're everywhere. on every continent, every place, there's more species of ruminant animals than there are elephants.
So our digestive system just isn't designed to eat these kinds of
things.
That's
right.
Isn't that interesting? You know about Jared Diamond, right?
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a paper called Agriculture was the worst thing that ever happened to us in human history, something along those lines. But the idea being that we're not supposed to be eating these kinds of foods.
Germs, guns, and...
Guns, germs, and steel. Yeah. But the idea is that we're not supposed to be eating these kinds of foods. What about gluten-free? What about gluten-free flours and gluten-free grains? What's your take on those?
Well, gluten-free grains are what? We're talking about millet.
Yeah.
Buckwheat, which is not wheat.
Quinoa.
And you're looking at rice. You ever hear of the old macrobiotic diet?
I don't know a lot about it.
During the 60s, the hippies, all those flower children were running around eating the macrobiotic diet, which was essentially a German cleansing diet that was made from brown rice and steamed vegetables. It was only supposed to be done for 2 weeks, but they felt good on this stuff, right? And so they added a little bit of fish to it, maybe some eggs, so you get enough protein so you could live on it forever. And, I mean, these people were solving problems like eczema, asthma, were all going away in this macrobiotic diet. And they said, it's the magic of the brown rice. No. It's because they gave up wheat.
Uh-huh. That's
okay?
Interesting.
And there was this Michio Kuchi who popularized, he's a Korean guy who popularized the macrobiotic diet. He had terminal pulmonary tuberculosis. I mean, 90% of his lungs were filled up with tubercle abscesses, and he was beyond hope, according to the doctors, right? He got on the macrobiotic diet,
gluten-free.
And 3 months later, he's gluten-free, he's cured.
That's a great story. Now, I don't know if people really recognize that you are a prolific writer, and you write some great books. You write some great books. And what I like about your books is how you pull together all these disparate fields, these disparate sciences, anthropology and sociology and history and economics and nutrition and chemistry and biology, you pull the whole thing together. And you got a great story, and I think it's in Hell's Kitchen. I'm not sure which one. I think it might be Hell's Kitchen. We talk about the wood ash.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a brilliant story about how people got the idea that you could actually get healthy by using ash. And you see sometimes, you'll see ash on in the ingredient decks or in the nutritional facts on dog food. And tell us a little bit about this whole idea of ash and minerals and how that works in terms of nutritional power. And nutritional
Well, sure. Well, this goes back to the caveman.
Was that Hell's Kitchen, by the way?
It was in Hell's Kitchen. There's a little bit of that in the book Rare Herbs and Cures.
Okay.
And also a little bit in
Immortality.
Let's Play Doctor, Immortality.
It's okay.
In all of it. Because in the old days, even in the caveman days, you know, they had fires, right, for their fuel.
Right.
And the cave's going to get filled up with ashes.
Right.
So they had to throw it outside. It didn't take long to recognize that, you know, where they were throwing those ashes, the green stuff, the leaves were twice as big than where it didn't get. So when they started gardens, they would throw the wood ashes into the gardens rather than just throw it down the stream or in the recycling bin to save the earth, right? They put it in the gardens. Well, wood ashes are not ashes. Wood ashes are really the minerals that the tree had sucked up out of the ground. And when you burn the wood for fuel, the minerals don't burn. So you have a powder in the fire pit, the fireplace, the wood stove.
The ashes, the minerals that aren't burning.
Yes, they put them in the garden. So then the okra and the tomatoes and the corn and the sweet potatoes and the beans and peas and cucumbers suck it all up. Eat your vegetables and your grains. You got it that way. You got your minerals in that fashion. Nobody made the connection yet. They were using it as a fertilizer, but they never made the connection. They were getting minerals from it. They never did that. But when I know the exact moment when everything changed. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday, September 4th, 1882, when Thomas Edison pulled the switch on the first commercial electric generating plant. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday, September 4th, 1882, he pulled the switch on the first commercial electric generating plant on Pearl Street in New York City on the bluff overlooking the construction of the Brooklyn Bridge. Within 10 years after that, every city dweller had switched over to electricity for heating and cooking.
So
how many wood ashes?
They didn't need any more wood ash.
No, they needed them, but how many wood ashes were left over when you cooked and heated with electricity?
Nothing.
Zero. So what did they do to replace all those minerals they'd been getting for thousands of years? Nothing.
They got sick.
They got sick now for diseases they'd never heard of before.
Oh, how interesting. So with electricity.
Yeah, it just displaced where our source of minerals.
That's interesting.
It was sort of a change of just like right now, you can't hardly find a payphone in an airport because of cell phones have replaced it. Newspapers are going away because all the little classified ads are going away because of the cell phones and eBay and all that kind of stuff, right? So is the postal service going away because of email? Yeah. Okay, well, the same thing happened when you had the electric stove come along.
There's no ash anymore.
No ash anymore. But they didn't make up the difference. Nobody knew to make up the difference. And so wood ash has been, when you look at the top, and this is where the book Immortality comes in, we looked at the top 20 longevity cultures on Earth. We did it through National Geographic. We read 60 years worth of National Geographics because we knew we'd have to spend millions of dollars of our personal money and years and years and years. And then people would say, well, Wallach, we don't believe this one, and we'd argue about that one. So we took everything from the National Geographic, give them plenty of credit and so forth. We used their pick of the top 20 longevity cultures. We have 40 times 100 years. They have 100-year-old per 250 population. We have 100-year-old per 10,000.
Wow. Okay. Which cultures?
Well, we're talking about things like Sardinians, the Nicoyans in the Pacific coast to Costa Rica, really weird places you never right. heard of, Okinawans, right? And so the Hunzas up on the Pakistani border with China.
Lake Titicaca.
The Titicacas and that kind of stuff. It's really, really weird. All top 20 longevity cultures are third world cultures. They're illiterate. They have no doctors, no medical system. They have no utilities.
Glacier milk. What do they have?
Well, I thought that's what it was in the beginning, but the universal thing that they picked was they all use wood for fuel.
Oh.
And by dumb luck, pharmacist Ben, by dumb luck, when you look at the agricultural schools at the universities in the countries in which these cultures exist, actual analysis of the land that they grew their food on, and they got the trees that they use for wood for fuel, they had 60 minerals in their soil.
By dumb luck.
Yeah.
That's great. All right. We talked to our friend, Aaron just a few minutes ago, and he's an amazing, amazing testimony to your, to everything you talk about. He lost 100 pounds. Everybody wants to lose weight. Obesity is ridiculous.
We're the number one obese nation in the world.
We're the starving obese. It's crazy what's out there. By 2030, they estimate 50%. Mm-hmm. Not overweight, Doc. Obese. Okay. Okay. So how can we use the Mighty 90 to lose some weight, especially now with Christmas and Thanksgiving, is how can folks use the Mighty 90 to lose some weight?
Well, again, pharmacist Ben, we're the number one obese nation in the world. We spend more money for healthcare than all the nations of the world combined, yet we're the number one obese nation in the world. What's going on here? What that tells you, you don't have to be too bright to stand back and say, how could we be the number one obese nation in the world? What does it say about the level of understanding of obesity by our doctors and our government? They
right.
know nothing.
Nothing.
Otherwise, we'd be number 204, right? We'd be the thinnest people on earth and the healthiest. But we're number one obesity because they know nothing about obesity. In their theory, you know what I'm saying? In their theory,
yeah.
obesity is caused from lack of exercise and a disease of excess. You're eating too much.
Right.
Because they think that we're like an oven. They think if you eat carbohydrates at only 4.5
calories in, calories out.
Exactly. 4.5 calories per gram as opposed to 9 calories per gram for fat. You can't buy fat. It's fat-free, low-fat, no-fat.
Right, but we're still fat.
We're still obese. Okay, and that's because it is not a disease of excess, and it's not a disease of lack of exercise. When you're obese or even overweight, it's a disease of deficiency. You're deficient in a couple of minerals.
So obesity is actually a deficiency disease.
Yes, okay. Obesity deficiency is a disease of a couple of minerals.
All right.
And the symptom of the deficiency of these couple of minerals is the munchies.
Ah, so you can cure the munchies by using these?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. So what are the minerals?
Well, I won't tell you yet. Because right. if I tell everybody, what I want them to do is get that book, Hell's Kitchen, and read the whole story.
Okay, so it's just a couple of minerals that will take care of the munchies.
Well, there's two minerals. If you have deficiency of those two minerals, you're going to be one of these people who weighs 600, 800, 1,200 pounds. But any mineral deficiency, not vitamin, you can be a deficient in all the vitamins you want and you won't gain weight.
Huh, it's mineral deficiency.
It's a mineral deficiency. In horses, it's called cribbing. They chew on the fence.
Right. How about pica? Is that what pica is?
Pica.
Pica, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And little kids will eat dirt and stuff
lead
like that.
Lead pain. Mm-hmm.
Yep, yep. Yeah. It's caused by mineral deficiency.
Huh.
Only.
So when people have the munchies, their body is the body's wisdom is let's go get some minerals and they're trying to find these minerals.
You're driving you to eat something to find the minerals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So using the Mighty 90 and using these minerals will take care of the munchies and take care of the weight loss.
Suddenly now, if you just get on the Alex pack, take the 90 essential nutrients,
right.
you'll lose 10, 15, 20 pounds in a month.
We see this all the time.
Yeah, without even thinking.
Yeah.
Because suddenly now, your portions are automatically get smaller because you're tired of throwing food away.
Yeah.
And you're not going to eat between meals. You'll take some snacks and think, you know, I don't even know why I took this. I'm not even really that hungry, but out of habit, you're doing it. And it doesn't take you long to figure out I don't need to do this anymore.
So dieting isn't even hard. Once you get the nutrients that you need.
I wouldn't even use that term.
Yeah.
What I would do is talk about portion control as opposed to dieting.
Right.
Because you don't even have to think about portion control because when the pica and the munchies goes away, portion control is just sort of self-regulating, right? Now, to speed it up, we actually have what we call the Slender FX Weight Management System, which has a meal replacer in it, which is 80 calories and no sugar. So it's great for diabetics who need to lose weight. It's only 80 calories. You can have two of those meals a day. I like to throw in a couple of eggs and make it with water. You're only going to get like a 250-calorie meal. So two of those, that's 500 calories. You're going to have a 300 or 500-calorie meal. You're down below 1,000 calories.
And you have all your nutrients.
You have all your nutrients, yeah. Right? Because you're still going to take your 90 essential nutrients. You're going to take your Alex pack. Even though you've cut your calories, your portion control is way down here. But you're still taking your 90 essential nutrients, and you're going to lose weight.
We see it all the time. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's the most dramatic example of how powerful this stuff is, mm-hmm. is the weight loss.
Yes.
And the weight loss shouldn't even necessarily be the target of what you're looking for. That's like an...
It just happens.
It just happens.
Yes.
It happens on the side.
Now, if somebody needs to lose 25, 50, 75, 100 pounds or more, then we throw in what we call ASAP. I like to add ASAP.
Yeah.
ASAP is an acronym for as slim as possible.
Right.
But I like to say ASAP because it's as slim as possible,
now.
As soon as possible.
Yeah, now,
exactly. And so what I like to do... If you need to lose 50 pounds or less, you put one dropper full under your tongue of this liquid, which it is, it's amino acids, which is the raw material for your pituitary to make certain hormones.
Like growth hormone.
No, like HC.
Okay, all right.
And so, don't tell anybody.
I won't say anything about that. It's a very important hormone, though.
Yeah. And so, instead of going and getting prescription injections,
right.
you do this yourself.
Right.
And you're going to lose, you know, a quarter of a pound, half a pound, 2 pounds a day, depending on how you are with that portion control piece, right? And just like you said, Aaron lost 100 pounds. We have thousands of people every month.
I see it. It's amazing. Yeah. It's absolutely amazing.
And I see it around the world. People are just, this product's going around the world now.
Yeah.
And
But they're adding years to their life. They're decreasing the likelihood of arthritis and degenerative diseases and cancer, God forbid.
Heart disease.
All of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's a combination of the 90 essential nutrients. The Alex pack is a combination of the super juices that's in the BTT, the Beyond Tangerine,
right.
115 super juices, antioxidants fending off the bad guys.
Magnesium?
Well, it's all in there.
Yeah. Well, the Osteo FX Plus, we haven't even talked about that one. That's a wonderful
product.
Well,
it's part of the Alex pack.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all in there. And so at any rate, obesity goes away very quickly. But when you say... right now they're predicting 50% obesity by the year 2030. That tells you that they don't know what to do. Because if they knew what to do, they'd say, okay, right now we're 36% obesity.
But it'll be
less.
Here's
what we do.
Yeah.
And by 2030, it's going to be 20%.
They don't know what to do.
They have no earthly idea because their theory has failed them.
Yeah.
And they cannot believe it's a disease of deficiency. In their little pea brains, they cannot believe that it's a disease of deficiency.
Well, they're still operating that steam engine mentality where you put the coal in and you get a fire, and they don't understand that the body's not a steam engine. There's a whole, it's a metabolic system. It's
yes.
a chemistry system.
Okay, now, the spinoff of that, of course, they say the people who are obese, they have a higher rate of
diabetes.
Yep. That's a sort of cousin disease here.
Right.
They run together, but not all the time. You can have people who are obese don't have diabetes, but they do tend to run together. And we've known for 70 years that diabetes, type 2 diabetes, which makes up 98% of the diabetic population, is a simple mineral deficiency disease again. It's not genetic in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
It is not genetic in any way, shape, or form, for emphasis, right?
Right.
It is a simple mineral deficiency disease. And I have to tell you this story. You will appreciate this, pharmacist, man. There's a fellow out there by the name of Jerry Murphy. He's an owner of one of the largest... I think it's the third largest medical laboratory in America. He services 7,000 hospitals and tens of thousands of doctors' private offices every day with his medical laboratory. This guy's got three PhDs.
Like a diagnostic?
Oh, a diagnostic laboratory. Yeah, they take specimens and send them to the laboratory. They send the results back to the doctor, right? I mean, this guy has three PhDs.
He doesn't have diabetes.
Oh, yeah. He had terrible brittle diabetes. I mean, his blood sugar is off the chart, even with injectable insulin.
And he knows about all this stuff.
Well, he has access to the finest endocrinologists, the cutting edge of research on what you do for diabetes, all the drugs. I mean, he knows everything about diabetes the medical system knows. Well, mutual friend introduces us, and because I've been talking about diabetes for 25, 30 years, right? And so I said, well, yes, sir, I can help you. I can get your A1C hemoglobin down below 5 within a couple of months. I can get your blood sugar down below 100 without medication. You'll be an ex-diabetic. And he looks at me like, oh, yeah, right.
Right.
He says, who are you? So I had to introduce myself a little bit. He said, well, I don't believe you. So tell you what, give me a test. I mean, give it a try. You have everything to gain, nothing to lose. You're not being successful at what you're doing. He said, okay, I'll give you 90 days, Wally. He says, if you can get my A1C hemoglobin down from 8.9 down below 5 within 90 days, if you can get my blood sugar consistently down below 100 without medication within 90 days, I'll be your best friend.
Wow.
I'll fly around my jet plane. I will show up spontaneous at meetings. You won't even know. I'll just appear and give my testimony. I will brag about you. I will put every one of my employees on your program, and I'll stop all my insurance.
And you knew you could do it. You knew you could.
I was self-insured. Well, I've been doing it every day for 35 years.
Yeah.
And so he says, but I'll tell you what, if you fail, if in 90 days you haven't gotten rid of my diabetes, I will hire somebody whose only job is to go around every place where you're going to give a talk and tell everybody in the newspapers and be interviewed and tell everybody what a quack you are.
Right.
I said, okay, Jerry, let's do it. Let's go for it. And he was kind of shocked that I didn't want to negotiate, right, and equivocate.
Right.
I said, let's do it. Well, to make a long story short, in 2 months' time, following exactly what I told him to do, and he was very good, he was impeccable in doing exactly what I told him, his A1C hemoglobin dropped from 8.9 down to 4.3, and his blood sugar went down to 62 without medication.
That's amazing. And you know what? The way you put it and the way you frame it, it's easy. It's easy. And I want everybody to understand this is easy. Mm-hmm. If you have diabetes, if you have a blood sugar problem and you've been told you're going to be on insulin the rest of your life and you're going to be on drugs the rest of your life, this is easy because it's a metabolic problem. And once you change your body's chemistry, it can't help but follow. Now, that gets us to my personal favorite product. And, you know, we all have our favorite products, but my personal favorite product is the Sweeties.
Yes.
And that's because...
That's the secret sauce.
That's the secret sauce, right?
For type 2 diabetes.
The chromium and the vanadium. And these two minerals are so amazing for blood sugar. Real quick, if you could just tell the listeners a little bit about chromium especially, but a little bit about vanadium.
Well, these two minerals have been known, again, for 70 years to support your body's ability to metabolize carbohydrates and fats and sugars at the cellular level, support healthy blood sugar, by sensitizing your cell membranes to insulin. That's what they do. They're sort of the cofactor necessary so your cell wall can recognize insulin.
Right.
So it can speak the language of insulin. People who have type 2 diabetes, contrary to what doctors tell their patients, when you have type 2 diabetes, you're making as much as 10 times more insulin than a non-diabetic.
It's resistance to the insulin.
Exactly. So the insulin level is going up because your body keeps trying,
right,
keeps pumping out more, saying, why aren't you responding? Well, that's because you're missing that key. It's kind of like the combination on a combination lock. And if you take this along with the 90 essential nutrients,
right,
by themselves, you'll get okay results. But if you take those two by themselves, you'll be unhappy. You say, well, that Wallach thing didn't work. You must take them along with the 90 essential nutrients.
The B vitamins, the vitamin C.
And all 90 essential
magnesium,
nutrients.
Magnesium, right.
In their theory, you know what I'm saying? In their theory,
yeah,
obesity is caused from lack of exercise and a disease of excess. You're eating too much.
Right.
Because they think that we're like an oven. They think if you eat carbohydrates at only 4.5
calories in, calories out.
Exactly, 4.5 calories per gram as opposed to 9 calories per gram for fat. You can't buy fat. It's fat-free, low-fat, no-fat.
Right, but we're still fat.
We're still obese. Okay, and that's because it is not a disease of excess and it's not a disease of lack of exercise. When you're obese or even overweight, it's a disease of deficiency. You're deficient in a couple of minerals.
So obesity is actually a deficiency disease.
Yes, okay. Obesity deficiency is a disease of a couple of minerals.
All right.
And the symptom of the deficiency of these couple of minerals is the munchies.
Ah, so you can cure the munchies by using these?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. So what are the minerals?
Well, I won't tell you yet. Because if I tell everybody, what I want them to do is get that book, Hell's Kitchen, and read the whole story.
Okay, so it's just a couple of minerals that will take care of the munchies.
Well, there's two minerals. If you have a deficiency of those two minerals, you're going to be one of these people who weighs 600, 800, 1,200 pounds. But any mineral deficiency, not vitamin, you can be a deficient in all the vitamins you want and you won't gain weight.
Huh, it's mineral deficiency.
It's a mineral deficiency. In horses, it's called cribbing. They chew on the fence.
Right. How about pica? Is that what pica is?
Pica.
Pica, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And little kids will eat dirt and stuff like that.
Lead paint.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. It's caused by mineral deficiency.
Huh.
Only.
So when people have the munchies, their body is the body's wisdom is, let's go get some minerals, and they're trying to find these minerals.
You're driving you to eat something to find the minerals.
Yeah.
Okay.
So using the Mighty 90 and using these minerals will take care of the munchies and take care of the weight loss.
Suddenly now, if you just get on the Alex Pack, take the 90 essential nutrients,
right,
you'll lose 10, 15, 20 pounds in a month.
We see this all the time.
Yeah, without even thinking.
Yeah.
Because suddenly now, your portions are automatically get smaller because you're tired of throwing food away.
Yeah.
And you're not going to eat between meals. You'll take some snacks and think, you know, I don't even know why I took this. I'm not even really that hungry, but out of habit, you're doing it. And it doesn't take you long to figure out I don't need to do this anymore.
So dieting isn't even hard. Once you get the nutrients that you need.
I wouldn't even use that term.
Yeah.
What I would do is talk about portion control as opposed to dieting.
Right.
Because you don't even have to think about portion control, because when the pica and the munchies goes away, portion control is just sort of self-regulating, right? Now, to speed it up, we actually have what we call the Slender FX Weight Management System, which has a meal replacer in it, which is 80 calories and no sugar. So it's great for diabetics who need to lose weight. It's only 80 calories. You could have two of those meals a day. I like to throw in a couple of eggs and make it with water. You're only going to get like a 250-calorie meal. So two of those is 500 calories. You're going to have a 300 or 500-calorie meal. You're down below 1,000 calories.
And you have all your nutrients.
You have all your nutrients, right? Because you're still going to take your 90 essential nutrients. You're going to take your Alex Pack, even though you've cut your calories, your portion control is way down here. But you're still taking your 90 essential nutrients, and you're going to lose weight.
We see it all the time. In fact, that's the most dramatic example of how powerful this stuff is the weight loss.
Yes.
And the weight loss shouldn't even necessarily be the target of what you're looking for. That's like an...
It just happens.
It just happens.
Yes.
It happens on its own.
Now, if somebody needs to lose 25, 50, 75, 100 pounds or more, then we throw in what we call ASAP. I like to add ASAP.
Yeah.
ASAP is an acronym for as slim as possible.
Right.
But I like to say ASAP because it's as slim as possible,
now.
As soon as possible.
Now,
exactly. And so what I like to do... If you need to lose 50 pounds or less, you put one dropper full under your tongue of this liquid, which it is, it's amino acids, which is the raw material for your pituitary to make certain hormones.
Like growth hormone.
No, like HC.
Oh, okay, all right.
And so, don't tell anybody.
I won't say anything about that. It's a very important hormone, though.
Yeah. And so, instead of going and getting prescription injections, you do this yourself.
Right.
And you're going to lose, you know, a quarter of a pound, half a pound, 2 pounds a day, depending on how you are with that portion control piece, right? And just like you said, Aaron lost 100 pounds. We have thousands of people every month.
I see it. It's amazing. Yeah. It's absolutely amazing.
And I see it around the world. People are just, this product's going around the world now.
Yeah.
And
But they're adding years to their life. They're decreasing the likelihood of arthritis and degenerative diseases and cancer, God forbid.
Heart disease.
All of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's a combination of the 90 essential nutrients. The Alex Pack is a combination of the super juices that's in the BTT, the Beyond Tangerine, 115 super juices, antioxidants fending off the bad guys.
Magnesium.
Well, it's all in there.
Yeah. Well, the Osteo FX Plus, we haven't even talked about that one. That's a wonderful product.
Well, it's part of the Alex Pack.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all in there. And so at any rate, obesity goes away very quickly. But when you say... right now they're predicting 50% obesity by the year 2030. That tells you that they don't know what to do. Because if they knew what to do, they'd say, okay, right now we're 36% obesity.
But it'll be
less.
Here's
what we do. Yeah. And by 2030 it's going to be 20%.
They don't know what to do.
They have no earthly idea because their theory has failed them.
Yeah.
And they cannot believe it's a disease of deficiency. And their little pea brains that cannot believe that it's a disease of deficiency.
Well, they're still operating that steam engine mentality where you put the coal in and you get a fire, and they don't understand that the body's not a steam engine. There's a whole, it's a metabolic system. It's
yes.
a chemistry system.
Okay, now, the spinoff of that, of course, they say the people who are obese, they have a higher rate of
diabetes.
Yep. That's a sort of cousin disease here.
Right.
They run together, but not all the time. You can have people who are obese don't have diabetes, but they do tend to run together. And we've known for 70 years that diabetes, type 2 diabetes, which makes up 98% of the diabetic population, is a simple mineral deficiency disease again. It's not genetic in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
It is not genetic in any way, shape, or form, for emphasis, right?
Right.
It is a simple mineral deficiency disease. And I have to tell you this story. You will appreciate this, pharmacist, man. There's a fellow out there by the name of Jerry Murphy. He's an owner of one of the largest... I think it's the third largest medical laboratory in America. He services 7,000 hospitals and tens of thousands of doctors' private offices every day with his medical laboratory. This guy's got three PhDs.
Like a diagnostic?
Oh, a diagnostic laboratory. Yeah, they take specimens and send them to the laboratory. They send the results back to the doctor, right? I mean, this guy has three PhDs.
He doesn't have diabetes.
Oh, yeah. He had terrible, brittle diabetes. I mean, his blood sugar is off the chart, even with injectable insulin.
And he knows about all this stuff.
Well, he has access to the finest endocrinologists, the cutting edge of research on what you do for diabetes, all the drugs. I mean, he knows everything about diabetes the medical system knows. Well, a mutual friend introduces us, and because I've been talking about diabetes for 25, 30 years, right? And so I said, well, yes, sir, I can help you. I can get your A1C hemoglobin down below 5 within a couple of months. I can get your blood sugar down below 100 without medication. You'll be an ex-diabetic. And he looks at me like, oh, yeah, right.
Right.
He says, "Who are you?" So I had to introduce myself a little bit. He said, "Well, I don't believe you. So tell you what, give me a test. I mean, give it a try. You have everything to gain, nothing to lose. You're not being successful at what you're doing." He says, "Okay, I'll give you 90 days, Wally." He says, "If you can get my A1C hemoglobin down from 8.9 down below 5 within 90 days, if you can get my blood sugar consistently down below 100 without medication within 90 days, I'll be your best friend.
Wow.
I'll fly around my jet plane. I will show up spontaneous at meetings. You won't even know. I'll just appear and give my testimony. I will brag about you. I will put every one of my employees on your program, and I'll stop all my insurance."
And you knew you could do it. You knew you could.
I was self-insured. Well, I've been doing it every day for 35 years. And so he says, "But I'll tell you what, if you fail, if in 90 days you haven't gotten rid of my diabetes, I will hire somebody whose only job is to go around every place where you're going to give a talk and tell everybody in the newspapers and be interviewed and tell everybody what a quack you are."
Right.
I said, "Okay, Jerry, let's do it. Let's go for it." And he was kind of shocked that I didn't want to negotiate, right, and equivocate.
Right.
I said, "Let's do it." Well, to make a long story short, in 2 months' time, following exactly what I told him to do, and he was very good, he was impeccable in doing exactly what I told him, his A1C hemoglobin dropped from 8.9 down to 4.3, and his blood sugar went down to 62 without medication.
That's amazing. And you know what? The way you put it and the way you frame it, it's easy. It's easy. And I want everybody to understand this is easy. Mm-hmm. If you have diabetes, if you have a blood sugar problem, and you've been told you're going to be on insulin the rest of your life and you're going to be on drugs the rest of your life, this is easy because it's a metabolic problem. And once you change your body's chemistry, it can't help but follow. Now, that gets us to my personal favorite product. And, you know, we all have our favorite products, but my personal favorite product is the Sweeties.
Yes.
And that's because...
That's the secret sauce.
That's the secret sauce, right?
For type 2 diabetes.
The chromium and the vanadium. And these two minerals are so amazing for blood sugar. Real quick, if you could just tell the listeners a little bit about chromium especially, but a little bit about vanadium.
Well, these two minerals have been known, again, for 70 years to support your body's ability to metabolize carbohydrates and fats and sugars at the cellular level, support healthy blood sugar, by sensitizing your cell membranes to insulin. That's what they do. They're sort of the cofactor necessary so your cell wall can recognize insulin.
Right.
So it can speak the language of insulin. People who have type 2 diabetes, contrary to what doctors tell their patients, when you have type 2 diabetes, you're making as much as 10 times more insulin than a non-diabetic.
It's resistance to the insulin.
Exactly. So the insulin level is going up because your body keeps trying, keeps pumping out more, saying, "Why aren't you responding?" Well, that's because you're missing that key. It's kind of like the combination on a combination lock. And if you take this along with the 90 essential nutrients, by themselves, you'll get okay results. But if you take those two by themselves, you'll be unhappy. You say, "Well, that Wallach thing didn't work." You must take them along with the 90 essential nutrients.
The B vitamins, the vitamin C. And
all 90 essential
magnesium,
nutrients.
Magnesium, right.
All the amino acids, I mean, everything. You cannot do it in an isolated
way.
That's
right, that's right.
Okay? I don't want people to get the impression they can just take those two minerals and their diabetes is going to win. No. Those are the secret sauce that goes along with the basic program, and then it will work every time.
There's actually a component in the body called the glucose tolerance factor, which chromium and I think vanadium might be
part of
part of that glucose tolerance factor.
But then it's something your body puts together when you have those nutrients, right? Just like your bones. What's the secret sauce for bones? Well, minerals, including phosphorus and calcium
and
magnesium. Well, no, your bones require all 90 essential
all
nutrients.
90 essential
exactly.
Nutrients.
So if you just take calcium, you'll still get osteoporosis and fractures and arthritis.
That's such an important point. You can't say that enough. It is the entire spectrum of essential nutrients. And that's why the term, the Mighty 90, is so important. It's not just one nutrient. As important as chromium is, and as important as vanadium is, and as important as calcium is, it's the entire spectrum of nutrients that you need.
You cannot make an angel food cake with McCormick's liquid vanilla extract by itself.
Right. You can get an angel food crepe, as you said.
Well, you wouldn't even get a crepe, but just the extract, right? But we can make a town diabetes-free in 60 days.
Isn't that amazing? Diabetes is probably one of the easiest things. One of the easiest things to reverse. And you know what's interesting is you could be a hero so fast when you get people like this guy you're talking about, Jerry. You could be a hero so fast simply by putting people on these kinds of essential nutrients. And how much death and destruction and just nightmares does something like diabetes cause in this country?
Well, next, obesity is the biggest single cost factor in medicine today. One-third of Americans, 30% of Americans, have type 2 diabetes.
And how many pre-diabetics?
Well, that's scary, isn't it?
Right?
Another one-third.
Right? So you're talking two-thirds of a country that spends more money than any
other... All nations combined.
Combined, right? Yeah. we spend more money than any other country in the history of the planet.
All nations combined, not any country. All nations.
Ever in history, and we are the sickest culture in the history of the planet. And something as simple as supplementing with nutrition, making sure that you're eating correctly.
Staying away from the bad things.
Staying away from the bad things can make such a huge difference. It's been such an honor to talk to you. I can't even tell you, Doc. Well,
thank you
so much.
It.
Thank you for, not just for me, thank you on behalf of everybody that you've touched and everybody whose lives you've improved, everybody whose lives you've changed. You're just an amazing, amazing, amazing human being, and it's a pleasure.
Well, I appreciate
honor.
You, Pharmacist you. Ben. I really appreciate you because 15 years ago
don't
you
talk
came
about
to
my
me.
Pants. Don't talk.
You came to me and you said, I really want to learn from you how to use nutrition to help my patients and people I know, and you kept your word, and I'm very proud of you for that.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much, everybody. It's been a pleasure and an honor. I'm Pharmacist Ben, Doc Wallach. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Thank you.
We'll talk again.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals. But the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com. Sign up as a distributor and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com.